Oh, I forgot the recording. Thank you, Jan. Anyway, lots of stuff going on. And like I said, you know, if you're listening to the mainstream media, you need to turn it off. And you need to go looking for some true news. And listening to those alternative stations, which are all over the internet and YouTube and that, when they're not censoring them, and get some good news, because, you know, what they do is they conquer through psychological operations and fear, and that's what they do. And right now, I believe their backs are against the wall, and it means they're going to be dangerous. There are some things that are going to come down. We have a lot of work to do. The economy, the money is in trouble. There's no doubt about it. We can't keep printing money. That, you know, the hockey stick graph, we're up against the stick, which means things are going to happen. Bad things are going to happen. How we deal with that is going to depend on how we are as a nation and as a people, because, you know, that could destroy us if we let it. We need to stick together, and we need to have a calm head, and we need to be operating in justice and in mercy and helping our neighbors, because the only way we're going to get through what's to come is by having brotherly love. And that's, you know, it's not about what's in your basement, it's about what's in your heart. Because if we don't come together in communities and stick together, no man's an island, and you can prep all you want, but guess what? You can lose all your preparations in one day when a stronger one comes and takes it from you. So make friends with your neighbors. Start conversations. It's time. This summer's coming. It's going to get warm. People need to sit out on porches, and they need to talk to each other like they used to 50 years ago. And 100 years ago. That's one of the problems. We don't talk to each other. And everybody's in their own little world, and we got our little tablets and our iPhones, and we're not looking up, we're looking down. And that is a problem. But there's a lot of good things happening. There's a lot of encouraging things happening. And I'm going to tell you one thing. This deep state, these people, they really are stupid. They really do stupid things because they're so arrogant. And they're so confident, and they never thought that they would be called out, but that's exactly what's happening right now. They're being called out. And there was actually a report. Let me see here if I can find it. I'll read it here. It's there were 11 congressmen that signed in the Justice Department. They want the major operators in this thing indicted, and that's Comey and Hillary and the Secretary of State there, what's her name, I'm having a senior moment here, Loretta Lynch, amongst others. And they named names, and they named their crimes. This has never happened in history before. Never before have anybody ever tried to take over a presidency from a duly elected president. This is unheard of in history, and this is what's been going on, you know. So we have a lot of first things, and it's up to the people to stick together and push this agenda of having them indicted and prosecuted. It won't happen unless we do. It's come so close. And these operators up there have, you know, that are all around President Trump and even in his cabinet are working against him, surrounded by evil. But there's enough good people out there that the word's starting to get out. So you need to be watching these things. The other thing is there's a new platform. It's called Qniverse and Patriots 24/7 on YouTube, where they go over everything that gets put out by President Trump's team and the QAnon, which you should go investigate that, because that's really will give you an idea what's going on, because you can see by the direction they're going in and the things that happen in a day or two that they're telling the truth time and time again. We did an interview with some of that group there, and it's on our NLA website, and it's under the NLA radio and TV interviews. And it's the first video. It's a special report, grand jury indictments filed. We had this group that found our docket out there with the indictments and got very excited, and they've partnered with us, and they have many members. My goodness, their 24/7 has upwards of 25, 27, 3,000 people on it all, at any time that it's running. And so you go in there and listen, and there's lots of people giving lots of good news and citing their resources. You know what I mean? It's not just a bunch of baloney. So, you know, you go up there and listen and get a list of and find a trusted group of people that are putting the news out. Greg Hunter is a very good one. Puts out a weekly review, does the news during the day. He just had an interview with Catherine Austin Fitz talking about what's going on with the money and the derivatives. Very interesting. You should know this stuff, because at one point here, all of a sudden, the yield curve is going to turn upside down, and the next thing you know, the dollar is going to be worth nothing, and silver will be up probably $600 an ounce, they're saying. I mean, when that happens, you know what that means. It means your money's worth nothing. And I don't think that they can stop it. The only thing is with this executive order that Donald Trump put in, and he's going after these corporations that have stole hundreds of billions of dollars from the American people, literally, even trillions. And so by getting their assets and seizing their assets and their money, that will soften the blow, because that will come back to the American people. The thing that worries me is we don't have very much of a manufacturing base anymore in this country. We've given it all away. We haven't made a nut or bolt in this country for 30 years, and that's no lie. I know I'm in the business, and I know that you can't buy an American-made nut or bolt, as far as I know. And our Pennsylvania steel industry is all but dead. These are challenges that we need to rise up to, and we need to retool and. In a certain sense, we need to have that wartime fervor to getting production back in this country. And part of putting those tariffs on and straightening out the trade deficit was the beginning of it. And it doesn't mean we're enemies or we're having any kind of a war. It means the playing field is more level, and I think they like it, because it's not America, it's the New World Order, and it's the economic hitmen. They almost took Russia out before Putin came in. They went in and did to him what they're doing to us right now. And so every country in the free world is getting hit with this, and we all need to get back on our feet. And you know, it's up to America right now to get our manufacturing base back, and it's going to take a few years. And so we have to hold it together. You know, we have enough resources in this country that we could export and we can supply ourselves. But we've been letting that go, and we've been all over the world being policemen and getting our noses in things where it doesn't belong, and then we take advantage. I don't mean we as in you and me. I mean these guys that are using America, the power of the military of America to push their agenda, have been going through the world and taking advantage of these poor nations and stealing out their resources and taking them not for ourselves but for their coffers, these international bankers that look at us like cattle. So this has been going on for 100 years or more. Well, it's been going on since the beginning, but the past 80 years, it's really taken form, and all their agendas have come to fruition, and they've selected almost every single president that we've gotten, and every president has bent to them since Roosevelt. Even Reagan. I thought Reagan was pretty good, and he was, but guess what? They got to him too. And basically, they got him doing what they wanted him to do. So the only president that hasn't bent to their will is Donald Trump. He hasn't, you know, they tried to use that dossier and say, look, we got this thing, and if you do what we want, we won't let it come out. And he was so incensed, and he said, it's not true, and I'm not going to do it, that he fought it. And so that's why you don't hear a good word on any of the mainstream media about him, because they're working on trying to destroy him. They want to take him out of office. If they can't get him out of office, they want to assassinate him. And, you know, Kennedy started out by saying secrecy in a free society is an aberration. I mean, I'm ad-libbing. And that's exactly what's going on now. All this secrecy, all this national security is used to cover up crimes, murder, pedophilia. It's all national security. We have to repeal that 1948 National Security Act, because it's by virtue of that when Congress asked for papers, that these letter agencies, the CIA, FBI, Department of Justice, don't hand them over, and they say, that's a matter of national security. Well, let me tell you what. I understand national security, but you don't not hand papers over in a criminal investigation, in an indictment. They get handed over, and they go into those, and they go into those committees, and they go over them, and then they release them as they see fit. What is this business, national emergency? Well, I mean, come on, you know, the records of Pearl Harbor were sealed for 60 years, and when 60 years was up, you know what they did? They sealed them for another 60 years, because that was another false flag that they don't want you to know about. Because the 60-year anniversary of Pearl Harbor, guess what was happening? 9/11, and they figured it was too much. If we found out that we knew the Japanese were coming and we kept it quiet because we needed that to get us into World War II, that we would figure out that 9/11 was a false flag. But anyway, I digress. So Jan, I know you're there. I don't know if we should start off with some questions. We got any announcements or anything like that? I don't want to go off too long here before we open the queue up. You got anything there, Jan?
Well, it seems it's feast or famine. Last week I had a bunch. This week I have zero. Maybe next week I'll have a bunch. So I guess we can move on.
Well, then I can talk longer.
Yeah, okay. And you have license to move on. Keep going.
Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and open. Anybody that wants to get in can please get in for questions. I'll do the best I can, and whatever we don't know, we'll try to figure out. I thought I had some, I wanted to get some word out here, and I set it up ahead of time, but my screen, I lost those websites that I was going to recommend that people go on to get some good news, because I think it's important. It's important to keep yourself bolstered up and not get too crazy or fearful, because that's what they want from us, you know. And there is a lot of good news, but there's also a lot of baloney out there. And you know, you want to be prepared, and one of the ways to be prepared is to get the proper news, you know, and really know the issues. So anyway, we got a couple of people in the queue.
Were you looking for the Q-universe reports?
What's the 24/7 thing in the Q? Yeah, the Q-universe. I'd like to put those websites.
Patriots Soapbox is a 24/7 thing.
Patriots Soapbox. If you go to YouTube and just type in 24/7 Patriots Soapbox, that's a live stream that runs 24/7, and basically it monitors Donald Trump and his cabinet and the military, what's going on. And then, of course, you have other ones in there saying, oh, that's a bunch of baloney and this and that. Once you get to know what's going on there, you pretty much know, you know, the truth. And I find it to be very good. And the other one is what, Q-universe? Is that it?
Yeah, Q-universe. Just Google Q-universe. Or go to YouTube and type in Q-universe. It's all caps, Q-U-N-I-V-E-R-S-E. And there's several special reports they put out this last week. One's on exposed viruses and bacteria set to exterminate. Another one on grand jury indictments filed. That's the original one that you mentioned a little while ago.
Yeah, that's the one they interviewed
and
me
sometimes.
On.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And sometimes they even mention us, or like you said, you're on there. So they're good to go back and listen to.
Did you?
Yeah, they're really impressed with us, and they really want to partner with us because they understand. You know, they got a lot of people. They have some of their main people and their main brains are not only from America. We have people from Ireland and England and Australia. Those are common law countries that wish they had the common law that America has, and they're getting ready to institute that. You know, they would like to go the step that we went, that England didn't go, by really handing it to we the people instead of, you know, they need to get rid of the monarchy. The Queen's still running things in England, whether you know it or not. They say, oh, there's Parliament. Yeah, baloney. She's got her fingers. She's controlling a lot more than you think she is, you know. And so, and she's part of this new world order. Hate to burst your bubble, but she's definitely in all these UN things that are determining the direction that nations are going in. So it's up to us to put up some kind of a resistance to this because the rest of the world is watching us. So hit those sites, educate yourself, it's kind of refreshing because you see that there's more like-minded people out there than you thought they were, or that they want you to think there is, because they want us to believe that we're a minority, and we're definitely not. If we were, Donald Trump wouldn't have got elected. Of course, you know.
And they're sharing information.
Absolutely. And a day doesn't go by that I don't learn something new. You know what I mean? You know, you think you know it all, but you don't know it all. And, you know, I a lot of times, you know, pieces of this and pieces of that, but when somebody puts it together in a timeline, then that's when they draw the lines between the knowledge, that's when you get wisdom, because you can see how it all fits together. And that's what's happening right now. All this information is coming together, and the light is shining on it that has been hidden for so long. And some of it is pretty ugly, let me tell you. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead if we have no other announcements and none of the other NLA people have anything to add. I'm going to open up and grab our first victim here, who is Connecticut Crystal. How you doing, Crystal?
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, I'm no here. Like, we can hear you. Good,
okay.
Good.
Yeah, I said I just, I had a long
So I heard you a little bit before, but go ahead and recap what
okay.
you were announcing.
Well, they're still trying to foreclose on my house, and I have my warranty deed. My house has been paid off, and I filed some, you know, because they're investigating why this company had put their names on my property. Well, anyways, we were going through all the paperwork for the past, since 2014, and that I've been going back and forth to court. And I noticed, we noticed about a few weeks ago how the first time I went to court, and when I went there and I said, am I a public servant of this court? And the judge said, no. I said, is this my grand jury? He said, no. He's the grand jury. I said, you just committed a treason. And I said, is there a sheriff here? And that's when he told me to get out of his courtroom and stuff. That was December 16, 2014. They withdrew my case. Then they turned around and put it back on there. And this has been going on, so I got to see all the transcripts, how they've been constantly withdrawing the case. And then when I did the subrogation, show me proof of claim, show me the contract, no due process, what have you, they never, ever answered me. But you got to see this last page. We could not believe that we went through this today, how six or seven times in one day, they were, you know, messing with my files, withdraw, then they had erase, then they were putting things in my file. So I got all the paperwork coinciding with what's going on. And it's good because they had an emergency meeting last Friday because of, you know, all the people losing their homes in the WPCA, which no one was supposed to know about. But anyways, the attorneys were there. And then they said that particular bill that they've been ripping everybody off on is this WPCA, the water pollution. Water pollution control. It's like a sewer bill. And it's a regular, well, it's supposed to be a bill that they're collecting on. So when I went to get my tax return done, and I went to get, you know, because they've been putting liens on people's property, which there is no contract. So when I went, I said, can I have my statement, what I paid? She goes, well, you can't use that for your income tax. I said, well, why can't we? They're taking our homes, and we have to pay it along with our tax bill. Who's paying taxes on this money? So now the flag goes up. So I said, wait a minute. If we don't have to pay taxes, I said, this is equivalent to our light bill, our gas bill, a charge card bill. You can't take nobody's home because you would go into a debt collector. Well, I guess everybody was, and then that no due process that President Trump signed off on, you know, and the abuse of authority and the, you know, because everybody's been putting things together on it. So, you know, about the abuse, do no harm, no proof of claim, a hateful crime, perpetrating a fraud, no contract, attorneys of the debt collectors. There was a few things. There was quite a few things that, you know. But anyways, I filed the papers in the federal courthouse, which everybody definitely needs to do, file a complaint in the courthouse pertaining to each and every one of their cases, because a lot of them, they've been perpetrating a fraud, and the debt collectors, who's getting the money and the property, it's the attorneys. And, you know, so I had it amended with the other case, so I just got to put some more things in there tomorrow, but I will get all those papers faxed over. But, you know, as I said, make sure you have people that go into court. So I got quite a few people that are going to court. And also, before I forget, too, I believe I sent it over. There was a reporter from the New York Times, because she wants to know, and she wants to do a big story on this illegal foreclosure and all this mess going on in our state. But I said it's in all the states, so you know we gave we faxed it to everybody who would want to contact her, because they could cover all over the United States about this, because we're all going through the same thing.
Hey, Crystal, yeah. do you know if they're doing an in rem foreclosure? Are they using in rem on you?
Well, I don't
know
what
that means. Okay, so they may or they may not. In rem is against the property, not against you. I mean, you still lose your house, but they violate your due process. It's like it's in rem is something that they used to do with pirate ships when the ship was abandoned. They would confiscate the ship and everything on it, and they would do it. You know, they didn't have to notice you to do it. New York State and a lot of the other states have gone to this in rem procedure because it converts the deed before they take the property, and it leaves it free and clear. It makes it much easier for them to steal the place. And then they also get to keep the proceeds from your equity when they sell it. Like, let's say they foreclose your house for a $10,000 bill, but the house is worth, you know, $150,000, and so then they sell it at auction, and they get $120,000 or whatever. You know, always used to be that you were entitled to the difference. You had 30 days to apply for it. But now what they do is they don't sell it until after they convert your deed into their name.
Well, see, first of all, I have an idea exactly what you're saying. But see, first of all, I have my warranty deed. The property is solely my property. I can go there and quick claim it to whomever I want tomorrow. There is not a daggone thing. By the way, I used to do this work. So So, I mean, the average Joe Schmo would have never picked it up. Secondly, they had changed my deed, mortgage deed, like five times. So I put my complaint in, starting with that PHH mortgage. As a matter of fact, there was a big lawsuit case with the PHH mortgage. I believe it was in Columbus, Georgia. And the gentleman won $21 million on his case, which I should have put a case in back in 2004. But they were the first ones. And I said, well, first of all, who changed my mortgage and who signed my name when I'm the one who put my contract together? Because I did not pay no. When I did my contract, because my husband, I said, I know all about that because we used to do it with the co-ops and stuff like that. So I said, I never included my tax bill in with my mortgage. I never included my tax bill nor my insurance, because when you include your taxes and your insurance and stuff like that, that will bring your mortgage up to almost like another $10,000 per year. You know, I could pay my own taxes and I could pay my own insurance, you know, and I always use my, you know, save the Christmas Club and Vacation Club. So this way, and I did that system for like 38 years, always worked. And it saves, because anytime you put all that money in an escrow, the average person's losing almost $10,000 per year. When your house goes into foreclosure, you don't get 1 cent of that back. All my, everything is current, my taxes, everything. You know, again, when I said, show me proof of claim, and I what I did, I that executive order that President Trump signed off on December 21st, 2017, about the abusive to the human right and all that, and the corruption and all that. I brought it to the town hall, the clerk's office, the first selectman's office, the police department, and give every last one, even all the attorneys. Everybody knows about it, you know? So, and it's like, do no harm. And they're perpetrating a fraud. As I said, I'll get that. I believe I did send it over, but, you know, because so this way everybody could just follow through. And whoever signs off on these crazy corrupted bills and the courts, these people are on their own. You know, and they're deliberately perpetrating the fraud on. And it's just like I went over the meeting, because I just came back from the board meeting just now, because they want to reduce the salaries of the kids, the education and teachers. I said, first of all, I said, this one class I'll never forget when I was in high school. I graduated back in the 70s, and this was one of our final exams before graduation. And it was political science and economics. And we had to know the government forwards and backwards, but also the cost of living. And this was the formula the teacher gave us. Back in 74, minimum wage was $1.10 an hour, okay? And then we go by our age. What was the retirement age in 74? It was 55 years of age. How many years before you would get to 55? It was 37 years. Every year you work, your minimum wage should go up a dollar. So by the time we retire, what year would it be? It was 2010. How much should minimum wage be in 2010? Minimum wage in 2010 should have been $38.10 minimum, plus your cost of living. So if, say, for instance, you were at the job 20 years or what have you, then your income would be probably about $60, $70. How on earth could anybody survive today in 2018 back to 1983-85 income of $15 an hour? It's impossible. You know, where is the money? And when they sit there and say we have a deficit, number one, I'll never forget what you used to tell us. Anytime a politician opens their mouth, whether it's Republicans, Democrats, Independents, the next question, when they are talking about a law or whatever they want to put in place, always think, is that law going to affect me or hinder me? Because the laws that these people put through never apply to themselves. They're in a league all by themselves, you know. And
yeah, well, that's
when
the
they
problem.
Say there's a, but again, when there is a deficit, how is there a deficit? New York City, New York, how many bridges just to go across back and forth on the tolls? It's like,
yeah,
what, 15?
And they're all falling down, too, so what's up with that?
Exactly.
Anyway.
So where is the money? Nobody asks the questions. There's a Lotto in every single state. Where is the money? You know what
I'm
saying?
We're missing $20 trillion just in HUD.
So obviously, who did the money go to? The military. But where did the money go to? You know what I'm saying? Everything is falling apart. We were born at night. We wasn't born last night. And people, as I said, I don't agree with Trump's a lot of, but I said, this didn't start with him. He just got an office last year. This has been going on. So tell me who your friends are, and I'll tell you who you are. And so basically, he really got everybody using their thinking caps, you know, because a lot of the things that are going on, it didn't start with him, you know. I mean, his mouth,
this is a 100-year-old plan. Well, actually, it goes deeper than that, but it's really been in full swing, you know, pretty aggressively the past 20 years. But it's been in place.
This has been going on longer than that. You know,
no,
even with Thurgood Marshall,
on,
I mean...
It's going on just before the First World War, but what I'm saying is we've lost so many rights in the last 20 years, it's accelerated. They're getting ready to clamp down. But anyway, I want to move on to some other people here, and you know, that's what I wanted to flush out was the fact that you got this water and sewer bill, and if it's a municipality that's giving you your water and sewer, then what they do is they put a provision in there that if it's not paid, they can add it to the taxes. And that's the reason they're able to foreclose on your home. As if you didn't pay your tax bill, because they added.
We pay the water bill. Everything is double. When you look on your water bill and your light bill, you're paying two bills, because it's just like on your light bill, you're paying two generations. One on the amount that you use, and the second one is for the private owner, under the company, whoever. And the same thing with the water bill. But the WPCA bill, that bill, I said, where do you derive at this figure, and how much do you use? You know, my bill for the two units that I use shouldn't be no more than between 4 to maybe 12 cents. I even topped it up to 20 cents. They got me paying the same amount as my water bill. Impossible. I don't own a car wash. I don't own a hotel. I don't own a restaurant.
You know, they do their fraud because nobody.
Well, but I'm saying people are figuring things out now.
Well, yeah, you know. Because nobody used to check. And look at you. As long as you're comfortable.
But people didn't know how to. Just like our minimum wage.
And not only that, they didn't care to. I mean, look at the people that knew how to, they didn't bother because they could pay their bills. But they've gotten so greedy that we can't afford to keep paying. But anyway,
exactly.
Send this, that stuff off. I appreciate that.
Okay.
So,
all
hopefully,
right.
You get some good traction there, Crystal.
Well,
okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, we got Linda from Virginia. Go ahead.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Well, anything I was going to say has been overcome by events because I went out to my to go out for a chicken sandwich, and found a notice on my vehicle, and it said, notice, and it says, this department is attempting to locate, and it has my name, and then it has, it is imperative that he or she contact this officer and his name of the warrant service unit, and it gives his number. And then it says Prince William County Police Department. So
what? The police department doesn't know where you live? they left it on your car? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
They left it on your car?
There's a note. It's about a 3x5 note. And I was here. No one knocked on my door. that I know of. Sometimes I'm in the back, depending on how loud they knock.
You're going to have to call and figure out what it's about. Just make sure it's not a scam, that's all.
Well, I've tried to call a number of times, and I just get voicemail. And so then I called the main number. I basically called 911 and asked for the police department. I said non-emergency and asked for the police department. And from what she says, it's a warrant for someone, either that, it's got my name on it, so I don't know.
Well, you're going to have to call them. You're going to have to call them back during business hours, I guess.
Well, of course, with the case going on and all the different things that have been done, I immediately was alarmed, of course, on what they might be trying to do. So, but like you said, until I get through to them, I guess I'm not going to know until tomorrow, because it sounds to me like they're not available in the evening. So,
right. Yeah, you just have to figure out what's going on, what department it is, and all that. But I don't know what to tell you about that. You'll have to do some digging further. Hey,
yeah. It's just that I know in the case that what they've done, like I said, my case, it was unconstitutionally vague to start with, and then no evidence presented and no due process, no administrative process. You know that things are not right from the start. And that regardless of what this turns out to be, you're immediately concerned that it might be more of the same. And I've also read other...
There's no place they won't go to accomplish what they want, and they'll do whatever they have to do to intimidate
you. That's what I'm concerned about.
You're preparing your case for federal court, I hope, because they're not going to do anything for you in the state court. Those are all constitutional issues that, if we had good judges, a good judge could come in there when you make those claims and he could agree with you and he could dismiss, but it isn't going to happen. It's just not.
Well, but when I'm preparing my federal case, but like I said, I have concerns about whether you can I'm trying to pin down, what's the probability of even winning there. And like I said, last week I presented this one case, with the dogs in the car and all that, code enforcement, and she was a retired lawyer, and she really fought in that case. And they, I'm sitting there thinking, in what country, on what planet could they went in and they took pictures of the inside of her house.
I remember this story because, to go into federal court and fight, there's a couple things you have to do and you have to know. I don't know why she lost, but obviously she didn't do what she needed to do. And that doesn't mean that you won't lose anyway, because it also depends on how honorable is the judge. And there's not too many honorable judges. And really, you want to set it up for a jury trial because you don't want him making any rulings, and they never want to give you that. So you got to be able to navigate that.
You know what? She didn't even make it past summary judgment.
Yeah,
it was decided.
The fact that she got a summary judgment means she didn't that she was in their in their jurisdiction. She wasn't in a common law court. Summary judgment should never be able to happen. because the judges, when you go into a common law court, the judge doesn't make the decision, the jury does. Summary judgment means he ruled against her. She didn't, did she have a trial? No, he dismissed it before the arguments even came, right?
The city filed a motion to dismiss.
Right.
That's what the summary judgment.
She should have given a writ of error, and she should have put it back in for appeal. She should have had that judge recuse himself. I didn't see the case, so I can't give you advice. Yeah. I can't give you legal advice anyway. I'm just trying to, I'm just trying to teach you the law.
She did appeal, and then they dismissed it. So I'm not sure what went on there. And I had contacted her early on in the case, and I was thinking about contacting her again to see.
Well, I shouldn't say appeal because we don't like to appeal because that puts us into their statutory court. We basically use the law and proclaim the law, and we convict the judge of the law. We give him a writ of error, and then we file paperwork, and then we bring it to the next judge. And that's just, look at the only way you're going to, a lot that, like Brent said, on a lot of these cases, the only way that you win is you wear them out. Either they wear you out or you wear them out. And you can wear them out because they get sick of it, especially the federal judges. They want to get it out of there. So the average person can't go in and tap dance in a federal court and persevere when you have judges that are lawless. You know, you need a jury. You got half a chance if you can get a jury and you can tell your story and they understand it and they identify with you. You might, just like the Bundys over there and those people from Malheur Refuge, the jury said not guilty because the government made such an ass out of themselves in court, the jury couldn't stand it anymore. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. that's one way that you can win through the jury. The only way the judge is going to give you a win is if his flesh is on the line and he doesn't want to stick his neck out for the state guy. That's how you can win. Like if you set your case up perfectly and you put things in such a way that he understands that if he doesn't rule right, you're going to go after him, and it's a blatant case. And usually what they do is they call the lower court judge up and they say, look, make a deal. Get this thing out of my court now because they don't want it there. But that means you wrote a very good case that the judge doesn't want to mess with. And that's all. And that's until you've had some practice, it's difficult to do when you're learning the system. So I don't know. And I've heard that to get a lawyer to go in federal court, I've heard that they get retainers of $30,000. Well, who's got $30,000 to give a lawyer? Not that I would go in with a lawyer anyway, but that's what I'm telling you. You know, there's a reason those lawyers get $30,000 because they don't like to be there either. ask Brent about federal court. He could tell you some horror stories. So it's not all roses in federal court. However, I'll tell you one thing, what I've noticed from the work that we've done, it seems much better as far as them helping you when you go in as self-represented. They have a person there just for you, and they do kind of help you with the forms. A whole lot more help than I ever saw in the state court. In the state court, all of those people from the word go just about are looking to stymie you and stick a stick in your spokes so that you can get thrown out on a technicality, because they don't help you at all as far as I can see. You know, once in a blue moon we'll get somebody that's sympathetic to us and they'll help. You know what I mean? When they read the paperwork, they get a little excited because we're going in as a grand jury and stuff. And I can't say that we've never had people in those courts help us. We do, especially when you conduct yourself professionally and courteously. And you write your papers, in such a way that they enjoy reading them. You see, that's your paperwork going into federal court should get them interested. Everybody that touches that paper should want to read it, because it's opening up things that they've never seen before. So the whole thing of going into that court, it's an education process for them. And that's why we need people to do these things, because they're not used to the people pushing back. And certainly, if you could write your papers with footnotes and things and keep it on point and not put too much in, because they get overwhelmed, you know what I mean? Sometimes less is more. That's a lesson that we learned. You know, in the beginning, we threw everything in but the kitchen sink, because we wanted to make sure we hit something. You know, we did the shotgun approach. But it's much better to stick to a particular issue. Every case has multiple issues, because every time you turn around, they're violating you. And I mean, you could document it and you could go after every violation, but it gets overwhelming, and pretty soon you look like a crybaby, even though you're not. I mean, they're just lawless, you know. And every time you turn around, they're taking a little piece of flesh out of you, and they are liable for that. But you gotta, you know, it's like, do you want to fight or you want to win? So you pick the issue that is the most glaring one, that's easiest to explain, and it's the one that will get you your remedy, and forget about all the other stuff, the little ones. And in the federal court, you can only talk about those violations of your unalienable rights. You can't talk about all the other baloney that's in the case, because that they've already violated you on the lower end, but they violated your due process. So you got to speak about your due process violations, and that's it.
You know, speaking about that, one thing I was thinking about, mine is going on now for 3.5 years. And another person I know in California that I talked to, hers is going on for much longer than that. And that puts you, I've described it to somebody like having an elephant sitting on you all that time, getting heavier and heavier, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, they go to work every day, go to court.
So how is it, you know, to me there has to be some kind of constitutional violation where they can just keep extending this and extending it and extending it forever. And like in my case, there was no specifics or anything from the start, no evidence, no due process, all that. And they just keep morphing it into something worse and worse. Now I've got a warrant. Now I've got a notice of a warrant, you know.
Look, they got all kinds of method of sucking you into their web. It's an art to know how to stick the sword in and end it. You see, that's what you're not getting. You're not getting to the point where you can take an issue and force the issue and let the thing die on that issue. It's an art. You got to know what you're doing, and you have to make it so that the judge's flesh is on the line, and it's blatantly, you know, obvious that, and you know, a lot of times that's how you win, because then it becomes too sticky for him to get involved with. I don't want to get too much longer. We got other people in here, but look at you got a heck of a road ahead of you. You know, I don't know what I can tell you here tonight on this or what, but you know.
And then would I be correct in saying that you would never ever get one of their public defenders, because that puts
I've also seen people that had good luck with a public defender, few and far between, but I'm not going to say it doesn't ever happen, okay? Now,
so you're not saying don't go there.
Well, the only way you're going to get a public defender is in a criminal thing. Now, if they're trying to bring criminal charges against you, that changes.
Oh, they've already charged me. They already that's what they charge me with. They charge me as a criminal with this.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, sometimes you can use the public defender as a buffer. And first of all, I'm surprised if they brought criminal charges, I'm surprised they haven't forced a public defender on you, because they don't let you go too far without having somebody there as backup counsel or something. They're always pushing a lawyer on you, because ultimately, if you're there, especially in a criminal case, and you're going to go to jail or whatever like that, you could say that they abused you, that the judge let the attorney or the prosecutor or whoever's pushing the case abuse you because you didn't have enough law background. That's why they don't like you to go in there self-represented, you know, and pro se or sui juris, whatever you want to call yourself. They don't like it because it puts a certain responsibility on the judge to make sure that you're not taken advantage of. I mean, look, lawyers will lie. They don't care. We've caught lawyers in lies all the time. We've caught them misquoting, you know, claiming a law or a precedent that didn't say what they said it said. So, you know, if that happens and you can prove that and the judge didn't correct them, that's on his back. And so that's why they don't like you to go in without an attorney, because an attorney is an officer of the court, and it takes the heat off the judge anyway. So,
well,
I don't know.
Now, it was a misdemeanor, but now if they are talking about an arrest, then that becomes
No, no, no. You can get arrested on a misdemeanor. You can go to jail for 2 years on a misdemeanor. Did you know that? In this state,
yeah,
anyway.
But, right.
It's still just misdemeanor.
Well, that's the other thing in this is by statute, I've read the statute, and it's not jailable on the first offense, only on the second offense. So I don't know. You know,
well, that's all helpful stuff to know with your case. I don't know where you are in your case or what, but, you know, it wouldn't hurt to talk to one of those public defenders to see where he thinks you are. And if the judge is sick of you and he wants to get rid of you, he'll school the public defender on what to say. I've seen this. It happened in a case that we had. They actually went out and made the excuse in order to facilitate getting this guy out of court, and they found the court case that would exonerate him ended up being the fruit of the poison, the fruit of the poison tree, and they let him go because they were sick of all the paperwork and the fighting, and he wanted him out of the court. So,
that's a different perspective.
Enough, you know, well, you've been at it for what? For how many years now?
3.5 years. The violation notice was 2014.
And is it all the same judge all the time, or has they changed judges on you?
It was the same judge in circuit. When I appealed it in circuit court, it was the same judge. He retired the end of March. So
right.
He claimed in several hearings that he was going to retire at the end of March. So I guess he did. But...
So,
maybe that's another aspect of it, isn't another judge that would be willing to take it over, you know?
Yeah, especially since he doesn't know necessarily what's transpired over the past couple of years. It's another wrinkle is all it is.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
okay.
You got a tough case there. I wish I could fix it, and if I was that good, I wouldn't be on this. I'd be someplace else, okay? Anyway,
yeah, and this has sort of upended my whole plan of what I was going to say tonight, so I guess I'll just say bear with me or something.
Yeah, and see what they want. Sometimes those twists that you're really apprehensive about, they end up coming back in your favor, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they do something stupid, and it ends up opening a door that you thought was closed. It happened to us many times, so don't despair about it. See, just check it out. See what's going on. And always try to think outside the box. Now, how can I use this? You know what I mean? How can I use this to my advantage? That's the mindset you need. Okay?
Well, the concern is when you don't have a lot of knowledge, you don't know what to say. You don't even know what to say and what not to say, you know.
Why I'm telling you, you might want to talk to at this stage here after you figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they've been trying to push a public defender on you. They always do. I've never seen it where they don't, because they got to cover themselves. Maybe see if you look like there's one there that's approachable, that's nice, and talk to him. I mean, you don't have to take him on as an attorney. You can say he's your backup counsel or whatever, and you can confer with him. He doesn't have to be your attorney, and you may actually get somebody that has a technicality that you can look at. You want this thing to go away at this point. You're 3.5 years. You don't want to fight. You just want it to go away. So whatever it takes to do that, that's the mindset that you need to have. Because when you want to fight and they want to fight, then what happens is, you know, all of a sudden you end up with this mutual assured destruction, nuclear war, and nobody survives. You know what I mean? And chances are you're not going to survive, you know? So,
my only concern in that is this is a permit process thing. I still have to get the permit, you know, from them. So I don't know. We'll see. But
yeah, that's another wrinkle. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Bye.
Oh, wow, that happened there. I hit next. Get back in the queue. I think it was California Fred that was coming up and got kicked out. I got Will from New York State. Fred, get back in. I'll pick you. I'll make sure I get you in. There you go. And then I don't know who else was in there. I'm gonna take Will because he's ahead of you, and I don't want to mess the queue up, Fred. But you're right after Will. I'm gonna pick Will. Anybody else that was in there, you feel free to get back in. We got plenty of time. Okay. Will from New York State. Go ahead. You're unmuted.
Hi, this is Will from New York State.
Yep.
I'd like to, first thing I'd like to say is thank God for the woman who was speaking just prior to myself. It's refreshing to hear with all the problems we have that she actually wore out a justice, which made him want to retire.
Yeah, exactly. Hear that.
I'm trying to see the sunny side of the sidewalk here. I said it when they were identifying me at the beginning of the call. I'm in Western New York, and my questions tonight all revolve around the suit for against the SAFE Act. And I received the email from John, as most of us did, that there were 3 writs of error that were supplied. My these questions won't take very long. There's a couple little parts to them, but they'll be very quick. I'm still at the very beginning stages of learning, so these may seem basic to you. But this suit was submitted in federal court in Albany, and I'm wondering, number one, why the 3 writs of error indicated on lines 9 and 10 were Dutchess County. Was that because that's where, John, you're located?
Are you talking about the SAFE Act suit, or are you talking about our
Yes.
I didn't realize there were 3 writs of errors in the SAFE Act suit.
Yeah, there's already been.
We just filed it here a little over a week ago. Why would there be writs of error in it already? I don't think they've answered us.
Yeah, we did, Gerard. They went out a day or two ago.
Right.
The writs of error?
Yes.
Yeah, the registry Hummel tried to kick it back on. He tried to pick the low-hanging fruit and kick it back, and then John wasn't going to put up with that and sign it, you know, sign the writs of error and put it back through. But
well, I missed that part. I didn't realize that he had sent them out. I'm sorry. Hummel,
yeah, no,
also, that seems familiar. We've had Hummel before and some other stuff, too.
Okay.
I remember.
Well, I've been doing a lot more listening than asking questions. You have to listen twice before you speak once, right?
Exactly.
But I was wondering, number one, why it was in Dutchess County that the writ of error seemed to have been posted from and not back to Albany, or is it just that's where the person, which where John had originated the writ of error from?
I don't know why he did Dutchess County. You know, I mean, I know that when we do the grand jury stuff, it gets an address from down there. You know what I mean? But unless he made a mistake, I don't know. But it has to go to that mailbox. You know, even though it's filed in in the third district, our mail is going to be down in that area, in the Hyde Park, Poughkeepsie area. So
okay.
It doesn't
all
matter,
right, so.
You know, what district we file. I mean, we could have filed in the Southern District of New York City, but who wants to go down to New York City? I don't. You know? So
well,
that's probably why he picked Albany, because it's easier for us to get in and out of there when we got to actually walk a paper in, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Well, it might have been simple mechanics, and I'm learning the mechanics of how these papers are submitted, and that's a joke that a lot of us use here in Western New York, too, like, who wants to go to New York City? So we always say that, too.
Exactly. Don't forget, he's you know, handling the paperwork for us, so it has to go to him, so I'm sure he put that address down, that box we have down there.
Okay.
And that would be the only place that we don't have anything up in Albany that I know of yet. So
right.
it would go to Dutchess County. So that's just a simple mechanics thing, that's all.
Okay. Well, that explains that. And then, for understanding and trying to deepen my knowledge, which there's a long way to go, the one writ of error was ex parte. I had no problem with that. It was clearly understood. The next one was writ of error and show cause. I had no problem with that. The third one, I had difficulty finding it, and I was using my Black's Law Dictionary. And even though it makes sense to me as a layperson, not nearly as versed as obviously some of your callers, it said ex parte right to proceed without cost. Now, that makes sense to me on many levels, but I couldn't find it a correlation in Black's Law Dictionary. I was wondering, where I could have gone for a better understanding of, you can justify that that the suit should continue without additional costs, essentially.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Sometimes we use an older version of Black's Law. Like some of the newer
okay.
ones don't have everything you're looking for because they killed it because it's too much freedom, But we don't have
it
because we're operating under common law. We don't have any problem going back anywhere with a common law principle. Now, a lot of times you might not be able to find it in Black's Law because you're using, you're using a 6th or 7th edition, and maybe John went into the 4th to get that. But, it doesn't – there's no such thing as freedom being obsolete. They say, oh, well, that's obsolete. When did our rights go obsolete? You know what I mean? They use stupid
right.
terminology like that, and people don't ever question it. Baloney, it's obsolete. You know what I mean? And we've gotten those kind of responses from these people.
Okay. So that's one thing I didn't understand. So I'm operating. I saw it a great deal on 5th edition. I've been referring to it for off and on for about 2 years before I came across National Liberty Alliance. So it could be from a previous edition that some
right.
of the words
not,
I thought they were a
right.
compilation, but I get the feeling they're not a compilation.
What happens is when they revise them and stuff, they hide what was in there, because they're trying to give us less freedom, not more. And by the time you get into the 7th, 8th, 9th edition, they got a lot of statutory stuff in there, that's not common law, and you got to know how to flesh through it, Look at any, it all has to be based on common law, basically, I don't care if it is statutory. A statute can have the Constitution behind it. Matter of fact, some of these U.S. codes, that's exactly what they are. They're statutes enforcing a constitutional right, So we're not against all statutes because that's the operating principle and the fine behind the disobeying of a constitutional premise, So the statute just lays the law out, maybe the fine, whatever. So I'm not saying they're all bad, but, it's where the evil starts to come in, though.
All right, so
you have to
just
be very careful.
Just to clarify, I just want to. So if I were able to get a hold of other versions of the dictionary, it would be worthwhile to keep, because each one of these are individually tools, considered tools, not a compilation.
Right, or they'll change the wording of it and try to keep it the same, but you might not recognize it. We have Black's Fourth, I think we got, right on the,
second
on the
too,
website.
Don't we?
What's that?
We've got access to the Black's Second. Anyway,
yeah,
this
Black's
was Second. Filed to get the $400 filing fee back that they charged us when we filed it. Like, and if you read through the document, it says, for example, plaintiffs should not be charged fees or costs for the lawful and constitutional right to petition this court in this manner in which he is entitled to relief, as it appears that the filing fee was originally implemented for fictions and subjects of the state and should not be applied to the plaintiff, who is a natural individual entitled to relief. It's done simply to get our $400 back.
Right. Okay.
Right.
And
that's
then,
but that scares the bejeebers out of them, because they like getting that money.
I know. That's
I know.
They set it up to make money.
If we get away with it, they'll say, holy crap, you mean I don't have to pay that?
That's right.
I know. I was in court this evening for my son for a non-crime, and I told him, just like James had told me, I met up with him in Syracuse one day, that, you know, all of these motor vehicle type things. Well, my son was ordered to pay $250 a year for 3 years for a total of $750 for so-called restitution to New York State, even though there was no harm caused to New York State, which made my blood boil. But I figured, you know what? I need to learn a lot more before I need to open my mouth, number one. But then really, just in summary, so that someone else could speak and ask questions, with regard to the upcoming preliminary hearing that's set for July 2nd concerning this SAFE Act lawsuit, what does it? I know that there was going to be more information that's going to be coming, but what is it going to take? What are the parameters for attending in person, and where will the in person location be? Any idea?
False. That's a stage tune, because we don't know yet. But you look at, that's where they're going to try to kick us out. I guarantee you that. And the problem, they will tell us, I mean, what room it's in. But we have to be real careful with that, because sometimes if they know you got a bunch of people coming, a lot, they like to change the room or you know, change the date at the last minute. We've had that too. So we'll try to get some kind of a communication deal going, like, you know, we do phone trees and things like that, since everybody that's going to go, obviously, is going to be in the tri-state area or whatever, but mostly New York. So certainly at some point we'll collect some phone numbers and some text. We'll try to do a text. I think that's what we did the last time. We had a mass texting. We had a service that would text. And so then if anything happened, we'd send a mass text out. I think we'll do that. I'll discuss that with John, because we haven't brought that up yet. But it's very necessary, because they play every little nasty game in the book to try to not get you in there. And, you know, it makes a difference if people show up, because those judges and are on their, you know, get nervous when there's people watching them. They don't operate very good in daylight with their baloney, you know what I mean?
Right.
So the more people, right. The more eyes, there's more light there is on it, you know?
Yeah, I'm one of the signed plaintiffs on there as well. So obviously, you know, what happens here, what transpires here, I can relate to the New Serpa folks and also the Scope folks in New York State as well.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're going to be getting information, but we will talk about that. And hopefully weeks ahead of time, we'll all know what's going on, you know what I mean, and what room it is and all that baloney. And we'll probably have some kind of a text system set up so that we could text in case they pull some baloney when we're there and change the room or try to dismiss it the day before. I've had that happen too. You know, they say, oh, we got an emergency and the judge can't make it, blah, blah, and then you got all these people going to travel to get there, and you got to try to get a hold of them before they leave, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So we'll do that texting thing. Okay.
Thank you very much.
I'm looking forward to seeing you up there. Go ahead. What's that?
I said thank you very much. Appreciate your time I wish I had better questions for you, but I'm still a novice and I'm still learning.
Yeah, we're all novices and we're all still learning. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, I didn't realize that I messed up and I didn't call for Brent before I started the question. So Brent is out there somewhere. Brent, can you hear me?
I'm here.
Go. Well, listen, I don't know what you planned for today, but you're certainly welcome to take off with it. Now, I'm sorry I skipped over you because I'm running the meeting and
that's
I'm
all right.
Out of whack.
That's all right. That's all right. It gave me time to eat my ice cream. That was important.
Well, that's good. I'll try not to eat ice cream now while you're talking, but no, go ahead.
Okay. Well, okay. Thank you again. My name is Brent and Alan Winters. You can find me at commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. My comments may not be the position of National Liberty Alliance, but often they are, I found. And I appreciate them. Let me say a few things. I relish the opportunity. A couple of things I wanted to bring up. I'm going to talk about the Declaration of 76. We're going through it, have been for several weeks now, clause by clause and blow by blow. And we're coming to a part of that that is extremely, well, not extremely important thing. Just say it's important, but it's ignored entirely. And I want to bring it out because it draws the distinction between the law of the land and the law of the nation and the importance of that in our American experience more than any other country in the world. As my brother used to say, he was right. America is the only, there are only five common law countries in the world and then some countries that were colonized and protected that have common law features, but there are only five. And of those five common law countries, only one of them is a common law country by choice of men willing to go to war to have it, and that's the United States. Canada is a common law country. It's not its own country by it because it wanted to be. It didn't have any convictions to be, and it isn't, and neither is Australia, New Zealand, and, of course, the British Islands and Ireland. There's been a lot of violence over there, but none of them have said, no, we're going to war. Because you're not allowing us. You're trying to stop us from enjoying what God has given us, namely the laws of nature of God. The laws of nature of God, the phrase attributable, as far back as we can tell, to a man named Reed. The laws of nature and the laws of nature is God. The laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things, meant to be observed, that's our common law. And the laws of nature is God, written in the Bible, says William Blackstone in his commentaries. And that forms the two volumes, these volumes and no others, these and no more. And if anything isn't consonant, at least consonant with these two volumes, it's not true law. It just somebody's idea the way they'd like it to be, and it won't work. It flat won't work if that's all it is. So it's important that we recognize fundamental things, and it's my idea to just keep talking about fundamental things because beyond that, there isn't anything else, as Vince Lombardi used to say every year when the Green Bay Packers had come in for early training. Three times world champions, and Vince Lombardi would hold up a football in front of the football players at the beginning of training camp. He'd hold up the football, and he'd say, this, gentlemen, is a football. And his idea was to never get away from the fundamentals, but just perfect and perfect and perfect and keep getting better at the fundamentals. That needs to be our mentality. Don't get the idea that there are some intellectuals out there, some intellectual thing you have to do or some course of reasoning you have to follow in order to know the truth. If that were true, God's a liar because God said that we must become as babes to understand his will. And that is true, by the way. I can tell you from personal experience, you must humble yourself and come in low and try to understand fundamental things. And start with baby talk, so to speak, and don't get beyond it and always hark back to it as your anchor. That's what God wants us to do, and there are some first principles that would teach us to do that. The intellectual, the person that wants you to trust, that's the crowd that wants you to trust the elite, trust the priesthood, trust the self-proclaimed university professors. hogwash. That's a technical term I use for it. The genius, when I say genius, I don't mean intelligentsia. I mean just genius, the fellow that was willing to think what others wouldn't think. The clarity of the simplicity of the matter is that God's man looks down the road and he sees where he's supposed to go. He doesn't have to think through it. The juror that's doing his job, I don't care how educated he is, if he can't look down the road and see the course that's supposed to be taken here, then he's not doing his job. See the course that's supposed to be taken. Forget the logic. You'll take care of that. You can do that. Once you see the course, you just stick to it. And that's what we need to do. Well, I was going to mention here this fellow that people called Adam Smith. Adam Smith wrote a book called Wealth of Nations, and it was more than a book about economics. It was a book about law. That's what it was about, because there's nothing that isn't about law, nothing. Any discipline that is looked at is an attempt to discern the way things are, and they aren't going to change. And once you've discerned those first principles, you've discovered law. That's what law means, law. An old Viking word that came to the British Isles, log, log. They were a pretty rough bunch. And the log to them, law, we just say law, meant that which was logged. It was so logged down, it couldn't move. And that's the way they use the word. That which will not change, cannot be moved, is immovable. That's the law. What most fundamentally is immovable? William Blackstone starts with these fundamentals in his commentaries. What's unmovable? I'll tell you, there's only two kinds of property in this world that men can enjoy. Two, just two categories. Our common law recognizes them both. Puts them in these words, land and chattels. Land and chattels, which means movables, that's chattels, and immovable property, that's land. Land and chattels. What's most immovable to men? Among all things that men know about this property, land is really not that movable. Oh, I know it'll drift around a little bit. It'll wash away some. It'll creep down hillsides. That's why the telephone poles used to lean on the sides of the hills. The geologist said that was what they called creep. What's creep? Well, that's just gravity. That's a law of nature. Everything moves downward ever so slow, but it moves. If it can, it will. It'll come down to center. Well, those are laws. Well, Adam Smith wrote a book called Wealth of Nations, and it was a common law principle, and he recognized that, well, I mean, what he said, and that fundamentally, if you sum up that big fat book, all he said was people ought to be able to let loose to buy and sell at impulse, because it's impulse that makes men want to do things like that, to trade, and every time you trade, you make a contract, and so he had a lot to say about contract, but he was choked with books, people said. And they said that, and he belonged to every important circle in his country, and he belonged to the National Poker Club, he belonged to all the so-called intellectual societies, anywhere he could get together where people could talk about things, he belonged to them. But he wasn't a logician as such, and he was invited to a lot of get-togethers, but people said that he was rough to deal with when he was together with people, because he was constantly, even when he was by himself, you'd see his lips moving, always talking to himself. Even while he was shaking hands with somebody else, his lips would be moving, he'd be talking to himself. Apparently, that's what he was doing. One time, he was criticized. He would hardly ever say anything out loud, hardly, very quiet, but if anybody ever got him to talking, he would talk a long time. And one time somebody sitting at the dinner table, a lot of important people there, were the elite meat, eat pig's feet, as they used to say. And he went off on a harangue against some politician. And he just kept going and going and going. Finally, somebody discreetly tried to let him know that the closest relative of this politician was sitting across the table from him, and he didn't know that. And he stopped for a minute, and he said to himself, the devil care, it's all true. I said the truth. Well, if a man shoves himself in the public light and you say the truth, you can't be in America. It's common law. If he shoved himself in the public light, you can't be taken to court for slander. But the reason I make that point is I'm a fellow that spends a lot of time, I don't know half of what he knew or a third or a quarter, but I do spend a lot of time trying to learn, and I read books, and I spend time reading history to try to understand the present and maybe even project my probabilities into the future a little bit, which you can do if you know about the past. And what I'm going to talk about today is just a matter of history. It's true, and I think it's important that we take note of it as a fact of history. It can help us today. And I'm going to talk about a fact of history that's ignored, as I'd said in the beginning. Because it's ignored, we don't understand our circumstances the way we could. And it's found in the 22nd paragraph of the Declaration of 76. The 22nd paragraph says this, against King George III and his conspirators. They're mad at him, it says here, and they're complaining against him, the Americans are, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for the introducing of the same absolute rule into these colonies. Notice the words here, absolute rule. They're accusing the government of England of trying to extend an absolute rule into the American colonies, extend it from, up here at the top, a neighboring province. And by establishing abolishing of the free system of laws in the neighboring province, complaining that the government of England is trying to establish an arbitrary government. Arbitrary, that means a government by the will of men. A government of men and not of laws, as we say in our common law country. And then enlarging the boundaries of that province to render it an example and an instrument for introducing the same absolute rule in these colonies. Notice the same absolute rule. Same as what? Well, same as the arbitrary government. What is arbitrary government? That's government without due process, just whatever the government wants to do. Arbitrary. No reason for it. I just want it. Why? Because I want to feel my lust. I want to have what I want. I want to feel powerful. I want to have all the girls I want, all the sex, all the little boys and girls, all the drugs, all the power, all just anything I want. I want to live above the law. That's what this means, and that's what men do, of course, if they're let go. That's why it's important that government not be arbitrary and we not turn power over to government. And our Constitution was written for that reason. Not written, no. Well, yeah, it was written for that reason, but what we were writing it for, what we wrote it for, was to establish our common law in these colonies. That's what this paragraph is about. Our free system of English laws, what is that? That is our common law. Called in other places in this document, our Constitution, little c. Because our Constitution is the common law. As we know it, that's the name we use for it today. It's been called other things through the centuries. We call it today our common law. Our Constitution also calls it Article 6, the law of the land. That is a phrase taken from Magna Carta, which was the former nomenclature for signifying our common law. And what does law of the land mean? Fundamentally, it means due process. Because our common law is a law of process, not a law of government will, reaching a certain result. Well, as far as this paragraph 22 goes, the British government's replacing of American common law courts with admiralty tribunals was a direct act of breaking faith with British Americans. That's what they were trying to do. Establish admiralty courts, establish bureaucratic courts, establish equity courts, establish canon law courts. We're going to get to that. That's what this paragraph's talking about. Signers of our Declaration of 76 here refer to the King George III and his cronies' indirect plan. They were pretty savvy about it. Indirect plan to displace common law protections. That's what he's talking about here, the free system of English laws, with civil law inquisitions by having made official in Quebec, in the province of Quebec, Roman canon law, and then intending to extend that church code of Justinian, really it's just the code, the Roman code of Justinian applied to the Church of Rome, extending that into the British American colonies to the south. But not only that, and I mentioned this last week, in order to do that, they didn't mess around. They extended the boundaries of Quebec clean to Newfoundland and then clean down to the Ohio River. All of the Great Lakes area, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, which was just opening up through the Cumberland Gap as people were coming down the Ohio Valley. And they said all of this is going to be under the canon law of Rome. That's all. That's shocking when you think about it, what it would have done for the Midwest. And the Americans said, no, hold your horses. You're not going to do that. We're British. We're entitled to our common law freedoms, right from freedom from unwarranted searches and seizures, the right to remain silenced, freedom to bear, carry and keep a loaded weapon, the freedom of religion. We don't have to accept the state's religion if we don't want to. All of these, a due process, all of these things we talk about, we must remember, are part of the common law tradition. They're not part of the tradition of the Roman law as it is applied today in Sweden, Germany, France, Italy, Greece, Ethiopia, Vietnam, Russia, China, all of the communist bloc countries, Bulgaria, all of South America, all of Central America, Cambodia. All of these places don't have the freedoms we scream about today and say they're taking them away from us. They don't even miss them. Why they've been under the Roman law so long, people in Russia, I've talked to them. They don't have a clue. It's just the way things are. They accept it. And that's what England wanted for the colonies, to deny them their constitution, the common law. Well, 19 months before this, on the 14th of October, the year 1774, the threat of this scheme of extending the Roman law into the Midwest of what is now the Midwest of the United States on the 14th of October, 1774, Congress got firm wind of this. That was before the Declaration of 76, you see. And having detected the plot, Congress gave the hue and the cry. They had something to say about it. Now listen to what they said. I'm quoting the Congress of the United States, the first Congress convened of the United States. I believe it was in Annapolis, Maryland. They said this: Parliament's Act establishing the Roman Catholic religion in the province of Quebec, abolishing English laws and erecting a tyranny there to the great danger from so total a dissimilarity of religion, law, and government with the neighboring British colonies, by whose blood and treasure the said country was conquered from France. By whose blood and treasure? What do they mean? Well, during the French and Indian War, the American colonies carried the load, and the English Parliament said, you're the ones that will benefit from this. You must give your blood and treasure. And so the American colonies said, okay. And they did. But then the British government turned around and said, it's under the Roman canon law now, and we're going to extend that law into these colonies. And Parliament said no. Parliament's Act, that was called the Quebec Act of establishing the Roman Catholic religion in the province of Quebec, as they say here, I'm quoting, abolishing the English laws. Now here's what really is curious about this particular thing they said here, the Congress of the United States. Annapolis, Maryland, and I believe that's where they met, if I remember right, the first time, was in the only Roman Catholic colony in the Americas. That was Maryland. Maryland was fundamentally a Roman Catholic colony. But even there, everybody recognized the danger of making the canon law the law of the land, the law that ruled the land, I should say. There's a difference. Well, why? Because it's an imperial law. It's about a dictator. And it creates a mindset, if people accept it, of accepting dictatorship. And by the words of this statement here that Congress made, the words, I'm quoting, so total a dissimilarity of religion, law, and government of the neighboring British colonies. Congress refers here to the king and his cronies erecting a tyranny to use Roman civil canon law's inquisitorial government in Quebec. The Roman law, the Code of Justinian, and its various forms that governs almost every country on the faces of our planet today is an inquisitorial law. Inquisitorial. The common law tradition, by distinction, is adversarial. Adversarial. We go into court and we fight. Well, we hope we do. God help us if we don't, because without a fight, the truth will never be released. What is an inquisition by distinction? An inquisition is the government wringing information out of people by the least burdensome means. In other words, burdensome to the government. If you can get a guy to fess up without doing anything to him, great. If you have to torture him a little, mind and body and soul, well, you got to do that. But remember, the ends justifies the means, so torture is okay. That's what inquisition is. I'm looking here. Sam Adams had something, so I'll go past that. The words "assistance of whose blood and treasure the said country was conquered from France" refers to the British American colony's giving of wealth and lives during the French and Indian War. It was that, I'm quoting the historian by the name of Coffin, he said, "The French and Indian War was a great struggle for supremacy between two races," that's the French and the British, "two languages, two religions, and two systems of law." Listen, if you've got a different God, you've got a different set of laws. Different set of laws, different God. Different God, different set of laws. Because law is the will of the lawgiver. Law is the will of whoever people say is God. That's what law is. And we say in our country that law is the will of the true sovereign. And the true sovereign, as men understand it in a Christian world, is the Messiah of God, Jesus Christ. And it is his will. In the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things through creation, and the laws of nature's God, written in the Bible, that men accept for freedom and reject for oppression, for discouragement, for despair. We must make a choice, each one of us individually. I've made mine, I hope you've made yours. Through that struggle, Britain conquered Quebec. Of course, the American colonies were involved in that. On the Plains of Abraham, the Battle of Quebec, as it is called, the most influential battle, clearly on the North American continent, and some people say the most influential battle in the history of the world. Now, I don't know. It's certainly right up there at the top. A battle that's forgotten largely. But lest we forget that when Stalin was in power in Russia, and when he was asked, what's the most significant fact in today's world? He said, without hesitation, the most significant fact in today's world is that all of the North American continent, from the Rio Grande clean to the North Pole, speaks English. What he was saying was, that particular area over there is rich in resources and production, and it's fundamentally different than almost the rest of the world because it's a common law country. He recognized that. And a common law country is a country where the government is stymied and limited. It's in permanent gridlock, intended to be a permanent Mexican, perpetual, never-ending Mexican standoff between the three powers of government, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. And God help us if we ever fall into that trap that a lot of people in America believe, apparently want. They want a government that works like a well-oiled machine. And that's the very thing that James Madison, Tom Jefferson, just as two examples that are well-known, said, no, we want gridlock. We call it today gridlock. They didn't use that word, but that's what they said a common law government is. A common law government's a government where the three branches of government are co-equal and neither one of them trumps the other, and they're in constant, perpetual, never-ending tension. Because when they're pitted against one another, as these men said that founded the country, then they leave us alone. We're free to produce. You know, the reason America was so productive and the reason that the British wanted what America had, and they wanted it under this They saw what was going on. You see, George the First and George the Second, they were kings of England. They were German kings, by the way. And then George the Third of the American Revolution days, his father, George the Second, and his grandpa, George the First, they were Germans. And the reason they were king, because they were Protestant. The one thing you can't do in England to be king or sit on the throne, you got to be a Protestant. That's the one non-negotiable point. And they happened to be, and they had to find one that would do it, and they had ties to the crown or the people in England. So they put them on the throne. But George II and George III were more interested, and this is what made the American colonies so prosperous. They were more interested in German beer and German Frauen. I think that's the way you say unmarried girl. If somebody speaks German, they can correct me on that. But they were more interested in beer and girls over in Germany than they were in being king of England. But they always showed up in England for their paychecks. They did do that. But then they go back to Germany. And because of that, they ignored government. And they ignored the colonies. And because they ignored the colonies prospered. The British didn't try to govern the colonies. Then George III came along. And the people in Parliament, they pushed him into saying, wait a minute, these are your dominions. You've got to take control of this. And that's what brought on the revolution. The screws, the thumb screws were put down to try to get the colonies in control. They were too prosperous. Of course, the men in Parliament saw all that prosperity, and they said, we want that. That belongs to us. They're our cow. They need to milk themselves and send us the milk. And they didn't want to milk the cow. They didn't want to come over here and get the natural resources. I just saw a thing the other day. Where was it? I don't remember. But it was about the old Ironsides, the USS Constitution, the oldest warship on the face of the planet, still in commission. Ironsides was called Ironsides because it was made of oak. Now, traditionally, white oak had been used in the British Navy, a very powerful Navy. White oak had been used, and white oak's pretty tough. But white oak is not as tough as that, they call that stuff down there in Louisiana, it's an oak. Tremendously gnarled and crooked. Water oak, no, that's not it. We have those around here. Well, this doggone oak is so hard, and you can only get it in America. And other countries begin to make raids into the southern states along the Texas coast to steal this oak for their ships. And that's what made the Constitution so that cannonballs did bounce off its sides. That's really true, and they did. Traveling at 1,000 yards a second. These balls were flying out of these cannons. That's pretty fast. 1,000 yards. And they'd hit the side of that ship, and they wouldn't go through. They'd bounce off. That's a true story. It's because they were made of that oak. Well, America had those kind of stores, and the British didn't have them. But that's just one example. Clearly, America is a rich mineral-rich and timber-rich area, as is Canada also. But they hadn't learned that at that time. But they wanted all that, and they were going to get it. Well, not to stray too far from the Declaration, I'll try to finish this section. Through that struggle of the French and Indian War, Britain conquered Quebec and ridded the New World of France's Roman law, priestcraft, Inquisition, proselytizing through terrorism by torture and murder. And that's what the French were up to. And they would incite the red man to do the same thing, as our Declaration of 76 says, inciting the red man against the colonists, which the French were notorious for doing. And it makes the point that when they did that, the red man had neither respect for age nor infirmity, nor sex. The murder was brutal at that time in those days. That's fact. I'm just talking about history. For whatever reason, I don't know all the reasons behind everything, but I do know that that was true. And that's the way it went. At the final showdown on the Plains of Abraham in Quebec, the armies of Britain and France decided the fate of the continent by battle in favor of our common law. But our Declaration of 76 says now King George has reestablished Rome's arbitrary religion, law, and government. And that's the statement quoting from our Congress of the United States. as had the Christian reformers, America's founders discerned the struggle for liberty to be against the powers. Watch this. Tom Jefferson said this too, the powers of priestcraft, the temptation of all religious organizations in every country, now I'm quoting Tom Jefferson, the temptation of all religious organizations in every country and in every age, the priest has been hostile to liberty, says Tom Jefferson. He has always been in alliance with the despot, always abetting his abuses in return for protection to his own. That, according to Tom Jefferson, and I think in history and even in our present world, I can see it. There are always that elite crowd. Call it what you want. You can call it a priesthood. Call it the intellectuals. Call it the professors at the colleges. Call it the judges on the courts. Call it the lawyers. Somebody sent me a map. You've all seen this map. This map of the United States. And every county on there that went for Donald Trump in red and all the other counties are in blue or something. And you can look, it's not hard to discern. You look at where, you know, in the middle of Kansas, there's just one county out there that is blue. And I know what that county is. I look at the map, I know where it is. It's Lawrence, Kansas. Lawrence. Well, that's home of the university there. You know, the same thing in Idaho, where the university is. It's the only place up in that part of the world that's blue. And you go down to Nevada, you see the same thing in southern Nevada at Las Vegas. You go to Illinois, all Trump, all around those counties, those farming counties in the Midwest, then where the University of Illinois is, it's blue. Why is that? Why is it that people lock themselves up in cloisters, get a big library around them, get all these books, and then all of a sudden, they begin to thinking that they get to make the decisions for other people, and their brains don't work anymore. And I'm telling you, that's what it is. It's that bad. Who was it that said, I knew who it was. It was Adam Smith again. His father sent him down to Oxford. He was from Scotland. He went to Oxford to study for 7 years. He came home. He said it was the biggest waste of 7 years he could imagine. He said, universities are nothing more than places where ideas find protection that have been hunted down and chased out of every other corner of the world. Universities are places where ideas that have been broken down, proven wrong, have been hunted down and chased out of every other corner of the world, and they find protection in the university. And you look at the map and you can see it. So that's what geography can do for you. You learn how to read a map a little bit, just a little, not much. Since Rome's empire and long before, the Roman civil law, the law of the city in its many forms, has been the state's tool of domination. Once put in place and accepted, domination and policing of the people is easier. It's easier if you can get people piled up in the cities. That's what they want. It's easier to control them. Over the centuries, Roman-style civil law, again, that's the law of the city as opposed to the law of the land, our common law, has devised methods of engulfing neighboring people using what the Germans now call Gemeines Reich. Again, some German intellectual said that. A people's observance of the law of the city that has arisen from the influence of its arbitrary government in a neighboring province. You see, even the intellectuals in Germany, after the American Revolution, recognized the method that England was trying to pull in America. Extend this law into these colonies from Quebec by extending the boundaries of Quebec. Well, the Germans thought about that later. Not to take away from these Germans, not to take away from these Italians, not to take away from these French. These people are smart. Their brains work well. They have thought great thoughts. Leonardo da Vinci, he had the secret of flight figured out. He just lacked a power source. He knew how to make it work. He said, if I had a power source, I could make this machine work. Well, it wasn't until the Wright brothers, somebody came along with a combustible engine, that any of that happened. But I don't want to take away, when you listen to me, don't think that I'm saying that somebody else isn't smart. No, people are smart by nature. All men are smart in their own way, whether we recognize it or not. No matter how foolish or stupid or even retarded they look, I've learned that the minds of men, even the most unlikely and the most looked down upon, they're a testimony to God's creative power. but that does not mean that men make right choices. And it seems to me that the more educated they get, in general, the more educated they get, the more they trust their own brains. And when you get the trust in your own self and not trust in your maker, you are on the road to destruction. I almost said something that was racy, but I'm not going to say that. But you're headed down the wrong road. Don't be pulled away by the intellectual crowd. No. That's why Tom Paine wrote Common Sense. Common sense was a phrase used in that day to refer to the idea that every man, especially those without formal education, can see and know truth and need to do it. And what they said was, what I said in the beginning, every man, if he's wise, he can see the right road and he'll look down it and he'll start down it and he'll insist that others go down it. He didn't think it through. It's not a matter of logic. It's a matter of having eyes to see. Jesus Christ said, let them that have ears hear. He wasn't talking to the people that hadn't been given ears. He was talking to the ones that had been, whose ears had been opened. Let him who has eyes see. And you cannot see, said Jesus Christ. You can't even see the kingdom of God unless I give you the eyes. What is the kingdom of God? It is the levels of jurisdiction, the arrangement of God's authority. That's what it is. And if you can't see that and long for it and want that particular arrangement, and God reveals that arrangement to us in his word, that's our arrangement of government, our arrangement of families, our arrangement of everything, our relationships, one with another. God has defined those very precisely, and he wants us to know more about it, but not to get away from the fundamentals. That's what he's after. Knowing that England's central bank, back in that day, must have available principles of civil law to enforce its East India Company trading and offshoot monopolies, with this cabal of British borrowing money from itself and then taxing itself to service that loan. Listen to those words, borrowing money, Britain, borrowing money from itself and then taxing itself to service the loan. That's exactly what the Federal Reserve Bank is doing. That's what the Bank of London does. And the Bank of London and the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States are twin sisters, like horse leeches. They only say two things, like a horse leech, give and give. They want you to give. And that's what it's all about, is slavery of mind and body, ultimately slavery of your productivity, taking what you work for. Well, King George and his co-conspirators and others kept men set about, kept establishing the civil canon law in Quebec, then using that as a pit instrument, it says, allowing its tentacles to grope, snatch, and bleed more and more colonists of their work and wealth. Grope, snatch, and bleed. There's no honor among the evil empire, among the useful idiots of it. No honor. They just want what they want. They're going to get it any way they can. They aren't interested in a fair fight. That's why the law of the city is attractive to them. If they can have power, there is no fight. You shut up and do what we say. You shut up and do what we say, and the only thing that matters is the will of the state. Now, Gerard, I've talked enough, but I wanted to do one thing with your permission. Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah. I am here.
Yeah, you're there.
Yeah, he's there. He just can't. Yeah, he can barely hear it.
Okay, here. I wanted to. Somebody sent me an email with a question that's on these calls, and I wanted to address it if I could.
That's fine.
Okay, just real quick here. I'll read the email and then maybe respond just a little, although I've said some about this. It says, as I understand it, a rationalist subjects the Bible to his reasoning. One who reasons out of the Bible subjects his reasoning to the Bible. Isaiah 1:18 says, come, let us reason together. Acts 17:2-3, the apostle's behavior is recorded. And three Sabbath days, it says, that he reasoned with them out of the Scriptures. And he says, at present, I am studying law with men that are full of logic. and their Babylonian brain mindset. That's a nice phrase. Hadn't thought of that one. Babylonian brain mindset. But they also quote the Bible a lot. Here's the question. Could you do a little more lecturing upon the difference between using our reasoning as opposed to our antagonist coming with his logic? And then he says, if you prefer, he says, maybe you can talk about this on Monday night. So that's why I asked if I could just mention this real quickly. I don't have to say a lot. You see his point. And I like to say this again. The book that did so much among many other pamphlets, that wasn't the only one. One of the most more powerful pamphlets at that time was a pamphlet called The Writs of Assistance by James Otis. It had to do with unreasonable or unwarranted searches and seizures. But there was a pamphlet called Common Sense. There were dozens of pamphlets published in those days, and men were called pamphleteers, because the pamphlets were popular. They were quick to print. They were quick to read. And people liked them, and you had a pamphlet, to be a pamphleteer, you had to hit the nail square on the head, you had to do it fast, and get your point across. I admire that. I wish I were more like that. I wish I were more brief, more to the point. But I'm working on it. Well, that's what the pamphleteers did. And Tom Paine, in Common Sense, that pamphlet was named after the popular phrase of his day, which said this, I'll repeat it again, it bears repeating, that says that every man has the sense. I don't want to call it common sense today. It's better to say by his common senses, the senses that are common to all men. The senses that are common to all men. You say, well, people, they'll all have common sense. Yes, they do. Just some of it. Some people are in the habit of using theirs, and other people aren't. Well, he ain't got no horse sense. Oh, yes, he does. He just has chosen not to use it for whatever reason, or he's been discouraged away from it. He has been, as the apostle says, led astray. He has been strayed from it. He's taken a frolic down a path. He's not on the highway anymore. He's off the course of due process, and he can't see the way. Jesus Christ said, I am the way. He didn't say, I'm the law. Why? Because the law, the true law, is a way of doing things, not what you do, but how you do it. It's the process that matters. We say it in our courts, even. Yet lawyers say this today. Good process, reliable result. Good process, reliable result. Bad process, unreliable result. You got to follow due process. Our Constitution makes due process the centerpiece. It is that's the rights of due process are actionable in a federal court. If you're denied due process anywhere, you've got a federal case. Due process is the most important thing. It is the number one thing. It is not one of the things. It is the thing. Because when there's due process, when we drag things out, people complain about the way courts are drug out. Listen, there's so much stuff going on in the courts. If they aren't drug out a little here and there for somebody that's interested in his case, if he's not willing to file motions, if he's not willing to drag it out, he won't be noticed. It's the fellow that drags it out that's noticed. The squeaky wheel does get the grease. So it's important that the process be taken advantage of. You have the right to petition government. What do we call that in the courts? We call that filing motions, filing papers, information notices, motions, moving the court. That's the part of our First Amendment protection, right that God gave us, the right to freedom to petition. You get your stuff in and utilize the process. Demand trial by jury where it's necessary. Demand that there be a warrant issued by a neutral detached magistrate that there's going to be an arrest or someone come to seize something out of your house. And if they don't have one, do it anyway. I hope. Now, I know everybody can't. I know it's a matter of money and time and emotions and health. But where you can, it's good that you say, no, you can't do that. That ain't right. That ain't right. You did that. How do you know? Well, it doesn't take a lot to know, and I don't have to be an intellectual. I just know that you haven't the authority to bust into my house and do those things. You know, I want to mention one other thing while I'm on the subject, and that'll be enough. Just a little bit of advice about the unreasonable searches and seizures. If somebody comes to your house from the government and wants to search your house or wants to come inside, I advise you don't let them in. I advise you not to talk to them. Don't say anything. don't justify yourself. Don't even give them your name, because once you start talking, your tongue's loose, you'll keep rattling. Don't say anything. And if they want to give you a warrant, demand that they give it to you from outside. Don't let them come in the house. And you look the warrant over. Now, if they just bust in anyway, that's a different matter. But if they are at the door and it looks like they're not going to bust in, you just say no and keep saying no. You don't have the right to search my house without a piece of paper from a neutral, detached magistrate. And you have to, if you don't assert the process yourself, it'll never be asserted. Now, I'm not telling you to get violent with police officers. I'm telling you to assert your rights. What are your rights? Hear me close. I was challenged on this point by a listener on one of these evening presentations, and I had to put my foot down and say, no, that I can't go along with that, and I don't think you should be airing that. Your rights are your responsibilities. Your rights are duties. That's what a right is. A right is not accompanied by a corresponding duty, as many say. Many more educated than me say that formally. It's not true. A right is a duty. Our common law is due process. Fundamentally, that's what it is, and a right is fundamentally a duty. That means you have a responsibility to exercise discernment on that right. You have the duty to decide whether to speak, freedom of speech, First Amendment, or not to speak, right to remain silent, Fifth Amendment. You have a duty over governance of your tongue, and you will exercise, you will either ignore that duty. You know, God wants you to talk sometimes, sometimes he doesn't. And it all depends upon this. It all depends upon whether the person who wants information out of you has a right to it. Does he have a duty to get it out of you? Well, he certainly doesn't have a duty to torture you to get it, to throw you in a cell and try to freeze you to death. Happens all day in America. They do that kind of stuff. Keep you away from your family for 7-8 months. I know of a case like that. Don't let them come until you talk. Don't let you out on parole. Back to the county where you're from, unless you give up the names of your wife and children and the addresses. I've seen that happen. All that ugliness takes guts. Again, I don't say everybody's cut out to do it at every point. Emotionally, health-wise, material-wise, responsibility-wise, family-wise, at every point, not everybody's called to do that. And that's a judgment you have to make, and I don't criticize people for not always doing that, because I know I can't always fight every battle I want to fight either. We must pick our battles and know which ones we can fight and where we can do the most good. And even in all-out war, you don't fight every fight. You don't fight every battle. In courts, you don't make every motion you can make. You make the ones you think are worthwhile. In the appellate court, you don't argue every point. You don't go in there with 20, like I knew one lawyer went into federal appellate court in the Seventh Circuit, and I think he had 24 points he wanted to make. What did they do? They fined him $10,000. You know, it's you can't argue everything. Justice is not perfect in our common law tradition. We look for substantial justice. Well, enough of that. I guess the point I wanted to make, I'll just get back to it to make sure I don't miss it, and I'll quit. We are not in our common law country called to be logicians and scholastics. We're called to see the way, get it clear in our minds, make sure it's the right way, and then go ahead and insist others go on the same path. You don't have to know you're thinking through it. You don't have to use the art of logic. And now he makes a point here. He says that Paul the Apostle reasoned with them for 3 weeks, a fortnight and a week, reasoned with them out of the Scriptures. Out of the Scriptures. He didn't reason with them out of the news. He didn't reason with them out of the latest magazine, the latest newscast. No, he reasoned with them out of the tried and true fact, the way things are, and they won't change, the very expression of the will of God himself. That you can rely on, and the history has proven it, and there are many other great proofs of the reliability of God's written expression, not to mention his unwritten expression in the nature of things. Well, thanks, Gerard. I'll quit. My voice is gone anyway. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Brent. We appreciate that. Very good. Okay. Let me see. We got Will from New York State as the next questioner. No, nope, it's California Fred. I'm sorry. Yes. Go ahead. Waiting patiently, yeah.
Gerard, I have a double-barrel shotgun question here, and I really, it perplexes me.
Just what I was looking forward to. Now, go ahead.
I visited or happened across a website today. It's called concealedonline.com. World Wide Web, concealedonline.com. And what this is about concealed carry identification, and you get this permit to concealed carry, and it's supposed to be good in about three-quarters of America. Some kind of a test you take online or something. I can play a real short, about three-minute introduction.
I've heard of that. Matter of fact, I was thinking of doing it.
Well,
but I got busy and I got away from it. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, look, I think everybody should do it. I have a concealed carry for New York, but you know what? Nobody's reciprocal with New York because New York's reciprocal with nobody. You know what I mean?
Well, I understand, but now let me explain. This is out of Virginia. Virginia is
right.
Where you take your online course, and they claim that you don't have to handle a firearm or anything else. You get this online training. So I'm assuming that you have to already have a gun permit and a firearm. And you take this online course, and then you submit it, and they send you this identification and a little badge. I guess that makes you concealed carry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the part I don't agree with is the fact that you need any kind of permission from any form of these idiots, these politicians, or anybody that would vote for them, because we have, you know, the right to carry arms. You know, the Constitution says that the Second Amendment shall not be infringed. That's the law. Anything else they write is BS to the max.
And
I'm thinking
that's what they do.
I'm thinking that this permit process might be nothing more than to find out who has guns where.
Well, I know people up here got what they call a 35-state permit or a 40-state permit. And what it is you do a non-resident permit from Florida, which is reciprocal with many states. And the other one might be Virginia. There's a couple states that they do it. So you carry both of those out-of-state permits, and that covers you in the majority of the United States. And, of course, you got to pay for them, too. You got to renew them every so many years. You know what I mean? It's $175 for the one, and I don't know what it is for the other one. So, like you said, and they had rumored that when Trump got into office, he was going to create something that you should be able to go state to state with any states. You know,
That was the I can't say the word.
Reciprocity. Yeah, reciprocity. Yeah, exactly.
It's a tongue twister with no teeth.
Reciprocity, I think it is. But anyway, yeah, and technically, under the Constitution, and Brent can verify that, it is in the Constitution, because what one state gives you, you have a right in another state. I'm pretty sure under...
No. No, you're talking about the law of comity, where you are entitled to the same rights as any citizen in the state you're going into, but it doesn't give you the right from one state to go in and use that in a state that prohibits those rights. That's where the lawyers twist it up. And he used the Commerce Clause to do it.
Hello? Okay.
Now, you can ask Brett. I'm pretty sure he'll back me up on what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've looked into some of that, too. You don't get a buy a gun in Arizona and get a concealed carry and then start going to New York with it.
Well, that's what they were going to do, what they were pressing to. They were going to say you have to because it's a one state grants that right. If it's constitutional, then it's constitutional in every other state. It's a Second Amendment right. That's something that, look at, the Second Amendment is supposed to be the same in every state, is it not?
According to the Constitution, it the rights for people to own and bear arms shall not be infringed. That means no state has any power, and the federal government
exactly.
has no power.
Exactly. So if I got a concealed carry in New York, I should be able to drive any place. I mean, the fact that I have one means that they already usurped my rights by forcing me to get one, right?
Well, I believe
but
that you...
I'm not... They got certain rights as states over certain things, like alcohol or whatever. I'm not
wrong,
saying that.
Wrong. People have rights. States and government have powers. And we, the people, never gave them that power. It took a constitutional amendment for them to exercise that alcohol power.
Okay, so the alcohol...
And they have no power over drugs, munitions, or anything else, because there is no constitutional amendment giving them the power to regulate it. Now, you can ask Brent.
Those things that the state can regulate, I don't know what's a good example of what a state can regulate. Those they can do within that state. But if it's an unalienable right, they can't regulate it any more at one state than the other state can.
Exactly what John Duresh keeps telling you is that these local courts have no power to regulate, no power to fine or imprison. They're operating in color of law. It's a fraud. And he doesn't deal with fraud, and he doesn't deal with fiction. Am I not right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, then 99%. Now, I've got to hand it to this. In California, they pass at the state legislature level about 1,900 to 2,500 laws each and every year. Now, that's a lot of laws.
They're in competition with the federal government, huh?
I do not know, but how many of these laws apply to me? I mean, I keep hearing some of the ones they want you to know about, like buckle up or get a ticket. They're giving you fair notice on a bulletin board that you're going to be fined unless you buckle up, and it's a reason for the cop to stop you, where there wasn't that reason last week. And the insurance companies are pushing it because the donors are giving up too many organs. They're flooding the market. Anyway, I'm going to yield.
What was the particulars on this concealed? You said it was concealed. What? USA? What? What was the website?
World Wide Web dot concealed, concealed,
mm-hmm.
online.com.
Okay. Concealedonline.com. Gotcha.
I can play the video if you want.
Here, go ahead. We only got two other people, so if it's only a couple of minutes, we got time.
Yeah, it's pretty short. Tell me if it's too loud, though. I'm going to have to play with the mic. Let's see.
In the time it takes to watch this newscast...
Was that too loud?
Oh, that's perfect. Okay. Let her rip.
Here we go.
You could pass a class to get your concealed carry permit. You never need to fire a gun, much less touch one.
All you need is an internet connection.
Now it's your turn to join the trend that's sweeping the nation. And Concealed Online is ready to help you do it, providing the training and documentation that allows you to quickly qualify to carry concealed online. Just take our free training on your mobile or desktop. You can retake it as many times as you need to, cutting through all the red tape to make it easier than ever. And thanks to reciprocity laws, residents of all 50 states can now qualify to carry concealed in over half the country.
Virginia will now recognize all valid concealed handgun or weapons permits and licenses issued by another state.
Your permit will be issued by Virginia, but you can get it no matter where you live. It's valid in up to 70% of the country. Once you pass the test, you can instantly download your qualification certificate. Visit concealedonline.com to get started today.
That was it.
That's it. So what's it cost?
I think it was $60.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know how long the, you know, a year, 2 years, whatever.
Well, it costs more than $60, though, because there's other costs. I mean, Virginia might charge you for getting fingerprints there or something like that. There's always other little charges that come up. But you have to figure it out. What's that?
It's a rape.
Okay.
It is. It's a rape because, number one, you shouldn't need any kind of permission from any government. In fact,
you're just being too radical now. Come on.
you know what National Liberty Alliance needs to do is the grand jury needs to inquire about this reciprocity law when we have the right to carry no matter what and shut them down. And it's a universal law across the whole United States and should be the supreme law of the land that you can't make any law that would take away a citizen's right to own and bear arms unless they are in custody in a prison.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's that simple.
Yeah, well, it's still only 30 states, I guess they said, or something like that, right?
Something like that. Here we have different states, you know, with different levels of allowing our federal constitution to apply. And we never gave states the power to restrict our rights. They're grabbing that power. That's where an ultra-varies doctrine to take away their corporate status and nullify their whole damn state comes in. Under the ultra-varies doctrine. That's the kind of law I've been studying, and I don't know, maybe a lot of people think I'm a radical. But I'll tell you what, you look at the Georgia Guidestones, and they want to eliminate, what do we got, 7 billion people on planet Earth, roughly?
Billion.
Yeah, 7 billion. They want to make the new world population 500 million. That means somewhere along the line, they're going to exterminate 6.5 billion people. Now, doing the gun grab is just the first step. I don't know about you, but I kind of think when they come for my guns, I want to give them a couple boxes of bullets.
Well, you know, they won't get it down to 500 million unless they get rid of the guns because they'll be the first ones exterminated, and they know that.
Well, it's like back in the 30s when the revenuers would show up.
Yeah, but they're too smart to go at us head on. You know, we got school kids marching to give up their rights. This is the beginning of it. You know, England gave up their rights, Australia gave up their rights, and they're sorry they did. You know, you never get them back.
Gerard, all I can tell you is that these school kids, it was just exactly like Mr. Winters was just saying, you know, you look at the map, it's all red except the little tiny blue spot. That's where there's a university.
Right.
And what did he say about protecting thoughts and ideas that had nowhere else to go but be saved in a book somewhere and then pushed on the unsuspecting? Well, there you go. And what are they doing right now? They're in the process of going through the whole country and wiping out all of the Civil War statues and anything that has any kind of relationship to our past. And they're trying to guilt trip all the white people into thinking that we're somehow rich because we enslaved people or somebody else worked for what we have. And I'm saying, you know, enough is too much.
Well, it's the same old story.
No, it's not. This is different. This is a communist plot and conspiracy coming to full bloom. Now, McCarthy...
Fred?
Yes?
Do you live in Northern California?
Pretty much. You know where Monterey is?
Oh, okay. You're not in the state of Jefferson, then.
No, I'm in Little Mexico, surrounded by the taco benders.
So how do you? So you're a constitutionalist. Do you have any friends, or are they trying to kill you up there? What's going on?
Oh, I have successfully alienated everyone I worked with, my entire family. Nobody wants to talk to me. A couple of my sisters began to change their tune, and then they went off the deep end like me, but, you know, they're awake.
How old are you, Fred?
Oh, I just turned 69.
I'm just curious, because you call in a lot, and I thought, well, I wonder what it is makes this guy tick. And, yeah, and I hope you're not making it harder on yourself without good cause.
Well, I don't know. It's like, I got maybe a couple of good kicks left in me, but I want to make them count. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I wanted to make a mention to you here of something that happened. Again, this is from history, and it always turns out the same way when this happens. And this happened during the American War for separation from Britain. There were a lot of people in Britain that were against the war for a lot of reasons. And they had a pamphlet that a fellow named John Erskine wrote, and he was friends with a fellow by the name of Witherspoon. Witherspoon was James Madison's teacher. And Aaron Burr and James Madison were the best-known students of this man named Witherspoon. Witherspoon was president of the Log Cabin College, they called it in those days, because it was in a log cabin to start with. It was founded by a man named Tennant, and today it's called Princeton University. And Madison went to school there, and Witherspoon was called to be the president there. Witherspoon was a fundamentalist Presbyterian from Scotland. And Witherspoon wrote a pamphlet, and the name of the pamphlet was, Shall I Go to War with My American Brethren? In the year 1769, that was long before the war, well, a few years before the war occurred. And, of course, his answer in the pamphlet was no. And he wrote this to his British brethren over on the other side of the pond. But war broke out anyway. And there was a whole group of people there that got all worked up over what Witherspoon and Sir John Erskine had said. I said Witherspoon did. It was Erskine, Witherspoon's friend. But they were together. And this pamphlet ended up egging on an unbalanced, people called him an unbalanced charismatic man by the name of Lord Gordon. He was a member of the peerage in England. And he led a mob. He led a mob through London. And they burned all the Catholic churches, burned them to the ground. And then they couldn't find anything else to burn, so they ransacked the house of Chief Justice Mansfield and tried to burn it down. And then, it's funny now because I'm not there, but then they attacked the Bank of London and tried to burn it down. I mean, they knew who the problem was, but they went and tried to burn these things down. And they opened up the prisons, Fleet Prison, which was the big prison there in London at that time, and the King's Bench Prison. And the riots got bigger and bigger and bigger. It was an absolute army. There had never been a riot like that in London, even during the days of John Wycliffe. A lot of people got hung in those days. But there never has been one like that in England since. The Fifth Monarchy Movement was big, but it wasn't this big. And 285 persons died in the riot. 285. And 25 persons got invited to a necktie party and got long justice, and their necks were stretched. They were hung, 25 people. And I strongly advise against people getting involved in any overt violence against the government. They're not afraid of your violence. They're not afraid of people that will challenge them physically. A matter of fact, they have full confidence they can crush that like anybody, like a man would crush a bug. But what they're afraid of is what we write and what we say and what we teach. That's what they're afraid of. And that's where we have power, is in our words right now. Now, that's not to say that things can't get to that point. The point of violence, they can get to that point. And there comes a right point where that everything is right and armed resistance can be right. But it comes after a long patience. And we must be patient. We must be quiet. We must speak truth to the end before we do anything else. And we need to keep speaking it. And our common law government is not a government of assassination and coups and revolution. Our American so-called revolution wasn't a revolution at all. Not in the sense of the revolvingness of revolutions. Revolutions are called revolutions because they revolve. That means you have one revolution which revolves into another one and just keeps going round and round and round for centuries, as they do in South America, as they've done in France for centuries, as they've done in Russia, as they've done in all of the law of the city countries. It's all about assassination and revolution and coup and counter-coup. And that's not our common law tradition doesn't do that. Before Abe Lincoln was shot, and on that night also, the Secretary of the Interior, Stewart, the fellow that bought Alaska, I've got his name right, but he was shot too. I mean, they had plans to shoot a lot of people. And that was all the law of the city creeping into the weakness of our country after a terrible, unnecessary war. Everything was weakened. Executive power was over the top in power. And Lincoln even had a congressman jailed for making a speech on the floor of the Congress. And when all that happened, assassination became part of the game, of course. I have to say, without question, the law of the city of France was deeply involved. Mexico was involved. Russia was involved in our war. And England was encouraging the involvement of others. They wanted to split the country apart. Armies were planned to be posed in Mexico and Canada to invade at the falling apart of the United States. We were weak at the end of that war. Oh, we won. Yeah, but we were weak because we had allowed things to be done that ought not to have been done during the war, the brutality of the war. The war shouldn't have been fought. And once you have that kind of violence, that's when the evil men want to step in and abuse and take over. And that's when we're the weakest, when we're tired. That's why violence should be avoided at all costs if we can. As I say again, though, not to say that history has proven that there can come a time when there is no other choice. But I say again, they're not afraid of our ability to be violent. They're afraid of what we say and what we teach and the manipulation of public opinion. Listen. You can see it when we were talking about the map a while ago. The Americans want the right thing, by and large, no question. But what they lack is the confidence to see it through, the confidence to keep saying it when your neighbor makes fun of you, when the sodomites get on the Internet and try to hammer you down, like I've seen them do to my friends who have just posted something about what's right, about marriage, and receive an attack. To where the sodomites were calling found out where their children lived in other states, were calling them and threatening to rape them and to abuse them. And I won't even say what they said they were going to do to them. This is the Islamist says that Jesus Christ is the second greatest prophet. Should we allow that to be said in our presence, or should we put our foot down and say no? Jesus Christ is the lawgiver of God, the Messiah of God, and you won't talk that way in my presence. He's not the second greatest prophet. That's utter blasphemy. Don't say that around me anymore. I've tried that, by the way, in public. It causes quite a stir. People get real nervous. They get upset. They don't want the conflict. What I'm saying is they don't have the emotional stamina, even though they know what's right, to see it through. But the more we say it, the more other people will be comfortable with saying it. And we need to say what's right and to petition the courts where it's necessary. That's saying what's right. And every time you do that, you're acting in the, every time you petition the courts for what is right, every time you do and say what is right, you're saying to other people, there is a God, he is the God, there is no other God beside him, and his will is law. And if we don't adhere to it, we're going to suffer some horrible consequences. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God, says the writer to the Hebrew, the writer to the Hebrews. And that's in the New Testament. And much more fearful now in the New Testament, he says, than it was back in the days of the Old Testament, and it was pretty fearful then. But he said, now that we have the revelation, now that we know, we ain't going to get a break. So I encourage you, just quietly, confidently, you've got to gain the confidence of knowing true law, knowing fundamentally, just fundamental right and wrong. And another fellow came to me today, and he wanted me help with a contract problem. The guy made a contract with him. And he made a few payments and he quit. And he said, is there legal technicalities we can use here? I said, no, there aren't any. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I learned in Sunday school that thou shalt not steal. Is there something else we need to know here? He stole from you. And he didn't want to pay you what he owes you for what you agreed that he could have for a price. It's called stealing. It comes in many different forms. And it's not complicated. You know that, or you wouldn't have come to ask me about it. You know probably more about contract law in that respect than I do. You're the one that made the contract. It's that fundamental. And let's don't get caught up in all the intricacies. We can talk about things, but all we're doing is illuminating, elaborating, unpacking the fundamentals. That's what we need to stick with. And we don't need to be talking about being violent. Listen, when the time for, well, we need to know what it is. We need to discuss it in history. We need to know how it works. And when the time comes, if it does come, we'll know. But right now, let's do what they're really afraid of, petition government. And I appreciate what you're saying, Fred. Don't get me wrong. Don't think that I don't have those kind of thoughts. Don't think that I don't say to God, come and wipe these people out. When you coming? When you going to right these wrongs? When are these evil people responsible for murdering millions of babies and women and men for nothing? The Hillaries and the Billaries of the world and trafficking in children. When are you going to stop them? Is it up to us to stop them? Well, on an individual level, of course, I could stop them if they try to do it to me. And if I'm given power over them, and God might do that, or he might give it to you, and you don't do something about it, you're going to be answering to God. When he puts them in your hand, you deal with them according to his law. And there's a law, his will, for that kind of a situation. It's all there. Our common law does a good job of tracking the processes of God. Let's talk about it. Back to you, well, Fred, or have you got another comment, or Gerard, whoever's there?
Yes, I do. Now, you mentioned contracts. And don't worry, I'm not going to do anything but pray for my enemies, just like the 11th commandment says. Now, you mentioned contracts. There was a caller earlier that was mentioning the fact that he was going to get people running for office to sign some form of contract. Well, I'd like you to speak to that contract, because you, as a lawyer, do know that the words on the contract, you have to have some kind of dictionary to determine that contract. It has to be spelled out in the contract what words will be defined as. Otherwise, they can be taken out of context.
Well, sometimes that's necessary. Sometimes it isn't. Depends upon what kind of contract it is. I think the contract they're probably talking about here was it a contract that they would support and defend the Constitution? Was that the contract or the oath for it or something? I don't know what it was they were talking about.
Well, he would just mention that they would have to sign some kind of contract before they could run for office or before they could get his vote. I think that if the guy's not going to obey his oath of office, nothing he signs is going to hold him to it.
Any slick lawyer
can weasel his way out of it unless it's nailed down some way. I yield.
Right, no, that's true, but if it has to come to that, you're wasting your time even defining words. Either a man is going to take it serious or he isn't. But if he takes an oath, that doesn't give him a duty he didn't already have. It just magnifies the duty he already had as American to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign or domestic. The Constitution is the brief of the law of the land. It's a matter of process. It is our common law. It's a brief of common law government. It's the laws of nature. He's swearing to defend. And if you defend the laws of nature, you're defending the laws of nature as God, because the two are mutually supportive, mutually undergirding. And the contract, any contract a person has, is just a, it is just a promise, a contract. Most fundamentally, you can't get any more fundamental than this in definition. A contract is a promise the law will enforce. That's the fundamentals of it. It could be an exchange of promises. It could be a naked promise from one person to another. But still, a contract, most fundamentally, is a promise that the law will enforce. And the law doesn't enforce every promise. Not every promise is enforceable. But a promise is undertaken. I can even show you in the Bible where some promises that a wife makes are not enforceable until sundown. I mean, if the husband wants to disavow that particular promise, he can do that according to the law of God. And there's a reason, an important reason. Minors, a child that's under a certain age, he can make promises, and the law won't enforce them. Why? The law says he's not competent to make a contract. He can promise, and it's a good thing that he keeps his promises. But if a man is a lunatic, he's adjudged out of his mind. His promises aren't enforceable in a court of law. So I say again, a contract is a promise the courts will enforce. And be very careful what you promise. Because the courts, the law, there is the courts among men, and man's expression of law, we hope it tracks the law of the lawgiver. But whatever promise it is, in any case, what the courts of men do, God will see to it that the promises that he says are that the law, his law enforces, they'll be enforced. As the Bible says, he will require it of you. So be careful what you promise. If I've tried to learn a lesson in life, it's not to make commitments. I'm one to make commitments quickly, or I have been in the past, I should say. As I get older, I think I'm wiser. I'd make commitments and with all intent of keeping them, but then there are times when it's not even possible. Now, the law doesn't enforce a promise that's not possible to keep. In other words, impossibility is a defense in such a case. But it is important, and I've thought about this too. If you want to run for office, you have to sign this. You have to sign this document called the Constitution of the United States. I'll give you a copy of it, and I've got a place at the bottom with a juror at where you can get a notary to notarize your signature, get a couple of witnesses. I want you to sign this that you'll enforce it. And it couldn't hurt to do that, Fred. You're just further binding them, and then if they don't do it, you've got a piece of paper you can put in the newspaper with his signature on it, or on the television, or on the internet, or something. Back to you, Fred or Gerard.
I think the preamble to the Constitution says a hell of a lot more about why governments are created. I yield.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Gerard, I've been talking enough. Did you have something you wanted to say?
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay. Well, certainly the preamble does do that, and it would be good. Maybe it would be a good thing if we said to everybody listening, just encourage everybody listening to go back and read the preamble of the Constitution of the United States. And read it slow. Contemplate it. Relax. Sit down. Get a cup of coffee. And just read it slow. Don't concentrate on anything else. Just that. And think about what it's saying. Contemplate each word. It's pretty clear. It's not the words aren't real big in the Constitution of the United States. If you could read that in a week, read it every day. I know you say, oh, I'd understand it after reading it once. Well, maybe. Wouldn't hurt to read it once a day, every day, till next Monday. And then after you do that, I guarantee you, you won't know it. It'll know you. It'll own you. If you really relax and read it, and it'll become part of who you are. And then maybe read the next clause. Pick out another clause of the Constitution. Wouldn't have to read the next one. It'd be nice if you did, but you could go to the Bill of Rights and contemplate the First Amendment. Read it through in one sitting. Don't get in a hurry. Relax. Go slow. Get you a cup of coffee in the morning, maybe, when it's early, and just read through it. But you got to be relaxed. Give yourself a little time. Think about the First Amendment. You'll see things you'd never thought of before. Right now, most people, I would say, I'm just guessing, I don't know. I would say most people listening, what they know about the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, they've only heard from other people. That would be my guess. It's like the Bible. Most of what people know about the Bible, they've only heard from other people. But if you know how to read, you don't have an excuse. You ought to read it yourself. And if you read it yourself, you'll begin to contemplate it. We have an evidence class on Saturdays. And because the first epistle of John, five chapters, is about evidence, tests of evidence, that's what the epistle is all about. And every week, we read another chapter and then write three sentences about that chapter. Now, I'd want to say, and I need to start saying this, and I've tried this, and it's amazing what you can learn. Read one chapter of the first epistle of John every day. Sit down and read the whole chapter every day for 7 days. You'll be amazed at what you see through the pure power of observation. And this comes back to the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. There was a philosopher named Hume, Hume, H-U-M-E. And there was another man who was on the level of Hume, but less famous because he wasn't a left-wing wacko like Hume. His name was Reed, R-E-I-D. He was a professor, too. He came to America, by the way. He rejected out of hand Hume. He said, that's ludicrous. That's utterly ludicrous. Hume thought, of course, that logic was the foundation of intelligence. He said, that's crazy. He said, observation. Reed says observation is the foundation of intelligence. And Reed, along with John Locke, is the one that gave us. And Tom Jefferson was a student of Reed at William & Mary. And Reed came to America to teach. And Tom Jefferson took the phrase that Reed gave him. We hold these truths to be self-evident. That came from Reed, not Locke. But Locke had a lot of what Jefferson got. But Reed is the one that gave that phrase. Well, what's the significance of that? Reed's whole life was built around the idea that man's intelligence is built upon not logic, but observation of facts, by just sitting and contemplating. And when you read the Bible, and I hasten to add, the Constitution of the United States is not the Bible. There's a difference. It's not like the Mormons say. The Mormons say they're on the equal level. They aren't. The Constitution, the laws of nature, is God observable in the nature of things. And the final rule of faith and practice is the Bible, as William Blackstone points out. But when you take the powers of observation and you apply it to the Bible by just reading the same chapter every day for 7 days, I tell you, try my idea, because I did this, and I was amazed, I'm still amazed, as simple as it is, take a good translation, do not read the New International Version. That's not a good translation, that's only a glorified paraphrase, and a purposely bad one at that. But you can take the New American Standard Bible, the King James Bible. Those would be two good ones to start with. The New American Standard has its problems. It's a government project, but it does have good, memorable language, and it was translated with the idea of producing a translation that would be easily memorable, and indeed it is. It's funny, when modern-day people quote John 3:16, and most of them have never even read a King James Bible, but everybody, when they quote that verse, they quote the King James Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him, believeth in him, shall not perish but have everlasting life. People quote that, and the reason they do that is because those guys knew what they were doing when they translated that King James Bible, and one of their declared purposes was to make it memorable, because they knew if it was memorable, it would last. And indeed, it has lasted. I got to give it to them. But take any good translation besides the New American Standard. Don't read a paraphrase. Read a translation. If you want to read a translation, I would advise the New American Standard. That is the most wooden, literal, but it's literal, translation out there that is readable. I know of translations that are literal, but they're not really readable very much. I've got one myself, but it has a different purpose. I call it toward a raw translation. But get a good translation and read a chapter out of it. I'd say go to 1 John. His vocabulary is the simplest in the Bible. 243 Greek words in the Gospel or the Epistle of John. That's not very many. But boy, does he hit the nail on the head. And as Reed said, it's all a matter of observation. The intelligence of man is based upon observation. What the intelligentsia calls the scientific method is nothing more than observation. But observation takes concentration, relaxation, and it is the observation that makes possible the seeing and the seeing among things that look all alike to other people. You can see a difference maybe between two things. And if there's anything the evil empire wants to do, it's to destroy the differences between things, to make everything uniform. Oh, all religions are the same. All governments are the same. The sexes, how many ever there are, they're all the same. Unisex, unidress. One idea is as good as another. Oh, you believe that? Well, that's good. That's truth for you. No, that's baloney. That's not true. And Reed said that. He said, that's not true. There is truth. It's observable. It's concrete. And we can see the difference between things, but yet we have to relax to see the obvious sometimes. So I would just throw that idea out. Gerard, for people, I try to do it. We're doing an evidence class on Saturdays, reading a chapter, and I'm going to move to doing it every day for 7 days. Back to you.
Okay. Thank you. I got, I want to get Felicia in because we left her hanging last week, I remember. So I'm going to unmute Felicia and let her go. Hey, Felicia.
Hello, gentlemen.
Doing?
All right. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Yeah, you guys left me hanging out. I had some questions about, you know, you guys were talking about, but I'm going to try to be brief. As for Brent and all of you other guys, I learned the preamble of the United States in the sixth grade. That's when they teachers actually taught kids. And I didn't really understand it until I joined MLA. And that was over 40 years ago. As for the states that Trump won, the Simpsons actually had the states, the red states and the blue states to a T years before Trump was even running for office. But my main thing is, it's going on a year next month since I filed my documents, and I've been kicked out of my house, and I'm homeless. And what's going on with Judge Kahn and all these other people, because it's almost been an entire year as of next month since I filed my non-judicial foreclosure papers.
Yes. Yes. And John's writing the paper right now to, we've sent him the writ of error, and we've actually sent him the indictment. And the exciting thing, I'm going to say exciting thing, is that we've kind of got a little bit of a bully pulpit out there. Our word is getting out into up into the federal government because we're in a federal court, and there's a big shakeup in there, and that's what it's going to take. I mean, it doesn't matter what we send in there. What matters is that people stand and push, and that we get heard from the shakeup that's going on. So I can't give you a time, but I can tell you that it's very close to the point where they're going to start listening because they have to. And I think that's going to be probably in the next couple of months, you're going to see a big shakeup there. And that, you know, a lot of these, like Judge Kahn, I think he's still asleep, to tell you the truth. Some of these judges, the stuff that they're doing, I would never want to do in the climate that we're in right now, because, you know, they've been blatantly breaking the law, as you know, because they've ignored everything. I mean, they don't answer, you know what I mean? They're just completely lawless. What do you do? You know, I mean, what do you get? You know, at some point, it's like, yeah, I can understand why some people want to do lynch mobs, you know what I mean? And because it's like you're beating a dead horse with these guys. They're not answering, and there's no recourse. I mean, you're up in the top court there, and this guy, the chief judge, who came in on top of the case and overrode the magistrate, and by the way, we just sent the magistrate a show cause, because technically he was running that case. He was the one they picked to run that, and we didn't get any peeps out of him before the chief judge stepped in and said, well, I'm going to dismiss it because you need a lawyer. wasn't his job to do. And the magistrate should have stood up and said, I'm the one that was picked for this case, even though he might have been his boss, you know what I mean? Just because your boss says something, if it's wrong, if it's unlawful, you don't follow it, you know?
And unfortunately, a lot of people don't have any integrity.
Absolutely. Well, it takes courage because, look, the thing is they want to keep their jobs, right? So that's what's first in their minds with all of them. And you see that a lot of times, you know, with police officers. Well, I want to work. I'm just following orders. And, you know, I mean, that was what the guys in Nuremberg said that ended up on the end of a rope. I was just following orders. And they said, that's not good enough. And I'm always trying to tell the officials here that same line. They don't like to hear it, but it's the truth. You know, we had this law going in New York State. It's egregious. It doesn't make sense, you know. And different district judges have chimed in. And the sheriff was in our town one time with his deputies, you know, trying to explain the SAFE Act to us as if it needs explaining. And they said, well, a federal judge in the such and such district said that the magazine ban with less than 10 shells was unconstitutional, so they declared it unconstitutional there. But we haven't heard anything from our district judge, so we're still going to uphold it. I said to the guy, do you hear what you're saying? How can something be constitutional in one county and unconstitutional in the other county? That doesn't make sense. And I told him, I said, you know, As an officer of the law, you better know what you're doing, because if you're going to uphold an unconstitutional law, when that thing gets challenged, you're going to be responsible for the damage you do, because the people will come after you. I said, I know if you arrest me under that unconstitutional law, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to make sure that I get restitution out of you, because you're responsible for that. And they don't like to hear that. You know, but that's where we are right now, Felicia. I don't know. You know, there's a couple other things we're going to push up into there. But, you know, I'll tell you what, even this gun thing that we put up in Albany, having people show up to those hearings, it's going to make a big difference. You know, when they see that we're serious and that we got a following, that's what these guys understand, especially at the state level, you know. So,
yeah, well, I want to file something on a federal level, because this is like ridiculous, because they ignore the grand jury's documents, the judges and the lawyers, even the sheriff, and everybody ignored that, because I guess they're just doing their job. But they need to be held accountable for their actions, because it's wrong.
Well, they think they're doing their job. You're right. You're not in the federal court, right, Felicia?
No, sir. I need to file something on a federal level here in Florida. And I want my voice to be heard, you know.
Right.
The only fear I have is the fear in God. And that is it. I don't fear man. Man just have, you know, laws, statutes, and codes to manipulate me and to hinder me from what the true word of God is. I mean, I even sent Jim I think his name was Ron Wyatt. He did he went and he was an archaeologist, and he found the Ark of the Covenant.
Wyatt.
Yeah, man,
yep.
That was like the deepest thing I've ever seen. You know, that was like an eye-opener when he said the blood was alive, you know. So I know there is, you know, We mow our grass every day, and they tell us that, you know, we have to water our grass a certain type of day, and we have to do this and do that. But God didn't put any limits on us. Man did.
Right.
This is the way I'm seeing things. So, you know, when I started, you know, in L.A. and, you know, my eyes started to be open into, you know, reading and understanding what, you know, was really being done, even though I can't get past my last course because my dumb phone won't allow me to it. So, you know, it's like
monkey
bones are being thrown in. Yep. Yeah, it's dumb. It's dumb.
Okay.
And But, you know, I want to say something about what California Fred said about the Georgia Guidestones. What he says is accurate. It's there. They want to depopulate the population. Bill Gates, he wants to depopulate the population through vaccines. And they want to do that in America as well. I mean, it's being done all around the world. But in the end, you know, it's not about black, white, red, green, brown, or anything. We're all the human race on this planet, and we have to live together. We have to live together. So, you know, when I look at, you know, I listen to Brett. Brett is, you know, he know his history. But when I was listening to him tonight, you know, he kept bringing up England. It's like England has invaded just about every continent on this planet. You know what I mean? It's like, why? And then, you know, they have all these treaties, and, you know, you have the Moorish Nation. They have treaties with America, too, which is ignored. But the main thing is that we're all human. And until we – let me stop. Let me calm down. I don't got hype. We have to live – you know, I'm saying because I'm passionate about it. You know, here I am right now. I'm taking care of a former NASA astronaut from Cape Canaveral, where his own kids live here in Florida. He fell and broke his hip, his leg was amputated, and he relies on me, and I don't even have shit. He relies on me. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not about what race we are. It's about helping each other. And until we understand the concept of humanity, humanity will be lost.
Well, the ones that are pushing it. Let
me stop, okay, because I'll just keep going with this one.
Yeah. Well, we're on 12 o'clock now, but you're right.
As far as my house, man, they got people living in my house. They're not watering my grass. And I'm like, wow, my house was stolen. It was stolen.
Yeah, it was.
And I want to do something about that. And it's like, you know, I need to do something about it. That's just the bottom line. I need to do something about it. I need to do something about it now because I can't keep sleeping in my car and taking a bath at the park to go to work the next day. I can't keep doing that. They're doing this to me.
Yeah, well.
But I yell. Because I keep going.
Well, you're definitely an energizer bunny, Felicia. God bless you.
God bless you, too.
Yeah. And we definitely got to keep pushing on them and trying to
get it's like, you know, it's like they're getting away with it and they're living a happy life when there's people out there starving and don't have nowhere to live. How can this happen in America? How?
Well,
but everybody wants to come. Everybody wants to come here, though. Everybody wants to come to America because they want to be free. But when they get here, they see they it's not free.
Right.
Okay, I yield.
Okay. Okay, thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thanks for coming, and we'll see you same time next week. Good night.